Okay, I will call this meeting of the Government Operations Committee to order. I apologize that we are a few minutes late. A few of us got held up in rules slightly. So the first order of business is the approval of the minutes for the March 13th meeting. Do I have a motion to approve?
Mr. Chair, move approval of the minutes for the March 13th meeting.
Representative Lee moves approval. Is there any discussion?
Okay.
All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. First bill on the agenda. Yes, Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the chairman. There was House File 2127 was pulled, I believe, from tomorrow's agenda. If my memory serves me right, that was a bill that was coming out of corrections. It incorporates a bunch of corrections provisions within the corrections omnibus bill. In that committee, as the omnibus bill was passed out of corrections to public safety, Chair Considine gave the committee his word that the provisions needing to come before this committee would in fact do so in House File 2127. I'm seeing that that's been pulled from tomorrow's agenda, and so we have some concerns around that, Mr. Chair.
Yes, thank you for the question, Representative Zerwas. That bill is not currently in our possession, so we are unable to hear it. My understanding is there will be a clone introduced, and we will, because it's in, there is a rule, and I might need to defer to Mr. Gehring here, there is a rule that says if finance bills can, clones, as long as clones are heard in the government operations by third deadline, if it has a financial component, it still meets, it still has made the deadline. Am I phrasing that correct? You can probably phrase it better than I can.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, yes, so the House rule just requires that the substance of the matter that requires the mandatory referral be heard by this committee before the bill gets its second reading on the floor, so you could hear it after this deadline and still keep the bill alive in a clone form.
Yeah, that's our intention. So it's, we can't hear the bill because we don't have it yet.
Mr. Chair, when is your intention to hear the bill? Because as I recall, it was passed out of committee. It was passed. It was referred, I believe, the 2127 was referred back to, I believe, this committee. And so I guess I'm just wondering what the intention is. And then, Mr. Chair, a secondary question, what other bills are you planning on not hearing by first deadline but continuing to work on?
Representative Zerwas, I don't have all this information at my fingertips, so it's taking me a little while to get it. It's still, my understanding is the bill is still listed as being in public safety. It has not been processed on the floor and sent to us. There are a few other bills that meet that description. I don't have them at my fingertips. I can try to get them to you after the committee. So there will be a few bills meeting that that fall into the same category. Representative was.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and I think to all members, you know, I know that one of the popular things to talk about around here is that a bill is never really dead, and the idea that zombie bills come back to life. But I think the challenge is, Mr. Chair, is with this committee structure that's been unbelievably challenging for members to follow, for chairs to follow, for leadership to follow. It's been impossible for the public to follow, Mr. Chair. And so if now policy bills that don't go through this policy committee by first deadline are still going to be heard, are we just develop a master list of bills so that the public can know what bills are only dead if you follow the rules, but you plan on continue working on, or how's that going to work, Mr. Chair?
Representative Zerwas, I can be in touch with you about which bills fall into that category. This process has been used in most, this is nothing to do with the committee structure. This process of having a bill cloned has happened in the most recent sessions as well. I remember being on government operations last session and hearing bills after deadline. It's, you know, it's not ideal, but it is the way things sometimes work around here, and we will certainly make every we will make every opportunity to make sure that that's noticed, that the, you know, 3-day guideline for bills being heard is that it's posted well in advance and so forth, and that there's opportunity for testimony.
All right, one final question, Mr. Chair. I'm wondering if you could provide to the committee the times, dates, and number of GovOps committee hearings you plan to hold following second deadline. We're all trying to get our schedule set. It sounds like you intend to have the committee meet well after second deadline. And so, of course, that's concerning to the minority. And as we try to get our schedules set for the end of session, as that gets busier, as much transparency as possible would be appreciated by our side.
I will certainly strive for that, Representative Zerwas. My intention would be to meet as much as possible at our normal committee time, Tuesdays and Thursdays at 9:45. In this hearing room, we have this room set. So I think you would be safe holding those times off. It's possible there will be an additional meeting or two, but I'm hoping to avoid that. But I'm just I haven't mapped out the schedule for the next couple weeks at this point. Okay. So thank you. Any additional questions? So Representative Schultz has House File 1855, and I will move that House File 1855 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Welcome to the committee, Representative Schultz, if you could please describe your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 1855 proposes a state constitutional amendment to establish a redistricting commission to adopt our legislative congressional districts, which the state follows mapping these districts after every census. This bill will give voters a chance to weigh in on whether they want legislators to continue drawing district maps, which is what we currently do. As you know, redistricting drawing political boundaries occurs every 10 years after a census. Currently, legislators draw the maps or attempt to draw the maps. Since the 1970s, we haven't been very successful as a state. It's gone to the courts, which is a very expensive process because we have not been able to come up with a bipartisan agreement on the maps. Minnesota needs to follow the lead of other states and create an independent commission to create legislative and congressional districts. The risk of having one political party control each chamber and draw the maps is too great. We only need to look at our neighbor in Wisconsin, where they've gerrymandered their districts and have led to a disproportionate share of one party when it doesn't reflect the popular vote. Nationally, 120 of 435 House seats were considered competitive in the 1970s. Today, that number is only about 20 that are considered competitive. So gerrymandering has led to polarization and gridlock in D.C., something that we'd like to avoid in Minnesota as we try to achieve bipartisan solutions to all the complex problems our state faces. Ultimately, we need to restore the trust in government. The people of Minnesota need to be confident that their vote counts and that it matters. So the legislature should not be drawing political boundaries. At a time when our democracy is in jeopardy, we need to strengthen it. We need to give power back to the people and give them the chance to select their representatives here in the legislature and in Congress in a very fair process. So members, I don't have any testifiers unless other people, members from the public, would like to testify. But I'm open to questions.
Sure. Are there any members of the public who would like to testify on this bill? Okay. There was, please come forward. There was testimony in the election subcommittee yesterday, but I just want to give people the opportunity to comment if they can, but I will try to just limit testimony generally on both bills here, so maybe if you could keep your remarks to two or three minutes or so. That would be preferable. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeffrey Peltola. It's P-E-L-T-O-L-A. I'm here because I have serious concerns about a constitutional amendment. I've served on several government advisory committees. Most relevant to the redistricting bills are my 6 years as a member of the Minneapolis Charter Commission. And during my service, the voters gave us the responsibility of redrawing ward and park district lines after the 2010 census. So there's an experience with this type of thing already at that level. So as a nonpartisan judge-appointed body of 15, we appointed 9 additional residents to join us as the redistricting group through an open appointment process and to build up our diversity. And although some things could have certainly been done better, the process actually worked, involving numerous public meetings and some close votes for a while. Ultimately, we had a unanimous vote of the redistricting group and pro forma, the Charter Commission, 15 people voted as well unanimously on the final map. So, but one of the biggest challenges we faced was the tight time frame that we had to work under, caused by the delays in the state process that had to be decided by a judicial panel. So I hope the legislature and the governor can agree on a workable reform that will make the process work a lot better for everybody. So as someone with experience helping put ballot questions before the voters, kind of have to be doing that very carefully. So I encourage you not to go the constitutional amendment route at this time. The ideas being proposed aren't sufficiently fleshed out or tested to be virtually etched in stone. It seems like there's broad agreement to minimize the risk of partisan gerrymandering in the future, but I don't think we should do the equivalent of cutting off our arm to fix a broken wrist. So in whatever redistricting reform that emerges, the most important aspect will be the thoughtfully prioritized principles. To strike the best balance on those principles, we need measures so decision makers can know what they're voting on in terms of the likely impacts. Some of those impacts could be accidental. So among these metrics are those related to partisan gerrymandering. There's now widely accepted various techniques that can be used to look at the potential impacts of a map, whether they're accidental or intentional. So, but not only should this be transparent to the public should also have a meaningful opportunity to participate. Thus, we need to talk about how do we get citizen members on there. So nearly 10 years ago, Minneapolis showed that this type of hybrid approach can work, and that could provide a sound basis for the legislature coming up with a reform package that will work. And then after 22, with the benefit of hindsight, some lessons learned, maybe at that point, the constitutional amendment could be reconsidered. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Peltola. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Deborah Zavosek. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Happy to be here today. I am here as a citizen volunteer concerned about redistricting reform. I do medical research, so I came up with the medical analogy this morning. It seems like great minds think alike, of looking at passing a constitutional amendment to deal with this problem. This issue is like amputating an arm to fix a broken wrist. A broken wrist is fixable. There's problems, serious problems that need to be addressed. However, putting an amendment into the Constitution now inserts in stone. It's like pouring cement into the Constitution. Things are in there that haven't been road tested. And I would urge the fact that groups as diverse as Indivisible Minnesota and the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce have recommended redistricting reform, but specifically in the form of an advisory commission. And there are common sense, bipartisan solutions out there using an advisory commission, again, as the gentleman just said, with public members and retired judges to come up with a plan that can safeguard the 2021 redistricting cycle but not amend our Constitution in a way that could do great damage going forward. I, as I said, have just been a citizen volunteer working on redistricting reform for the past 2 years, but I also have done a lot of door knocking. I door knocked on 4,000 doors last year in greater Minnesota, in the suburbs and urban areas, and I heard voter disengagement from the process. People would slam their doors without even seeing what candidate I was knocking for or what party I was because they were that disengaged. Other people said they weren't going to vote because they felt that their vote didn't count. And some people said, yes, I will vote, but I'm discouraged with the system. So Minnesotans want fairness, and we need to get this fixed in a proper and judicious manner. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Representative Schultz, did you have a comment?
Can I respond to some of those concerns?
Would it be okay if we waited?
Sure.
Just waited until testimony completed? Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House File 1855? Are you? Okay, seeing none. Representative Schultz, why don't you respond, and then I have a couple member questions.
Thank you. So there was a ballot question in the 1980s, and it failed because if you fail to vote, it's considered as a no. So this question has put before the voters before. It was a very close outcome. And the reason why you can't just have it in state statute is that if one party controls the governor's office, the House, and the Senate, they can just remove that language from state statute. And so the other problem of being advisory is that that's what we currently have, and it goes to the courts and could get litigated, so it's expensive, it's not efficient. This constitutional amendment would be based on an independent commission as outlined in the elections bill that you're going to hear next. So there is being proposed an independent commission of retired judges and members from the public. So it would have a process in place in law, if that bill passed, that would underlie this idea of a constitutional amendment. And there would be measures used in reporting to see how fair that those maps are drawn, and a process for public testimony on the proposed drafts of the maps.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Representative Kwan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I have a couple of questions. Why are over two-thirds of the people that would be on this commission, their selection is not even hinted as to the details?
Representative Schultz.
Yes, Mr. Chair, Representative Kwan, the details are an underlying bill that is traveling separately in terms of how the process would work. And this bill was split in committee yesterday, I believe, and that language was removed.
Representative Kwan?
Thank you. And we have this bill before us. We had a lengthy discussion about a bill that wasn't in our possession, wasn't before us. So I'm asking on this bill, the merits of this bill, because we have no guarantee that any other bill passes or what form that other bill may be when it does pass. So it's before this committee, and I'm asking, to me it doesn't seem very good that the vast majority isn't delineated in here. So we have no idea, of what or who or the selection. So that's troubling. Plus, we are going again from elected people. And judges, they're on the ballot, too. So our current system has elected people chosen by the citizens having the input and competitiveness. If you look at the last few decades, we've had our congressional districts go back and forth who has the majority of positions. We just had four congressional districts change party affiliations. I would say that the current system has provided us an extremely competitive compared to, I think California already has, a similar commission, unelected commission that performs it, and I've seen multiple examples from that state in that process of the, very gerrymandered, really creative ink blot style structures for those, and I'm not seeing that in our process. Is it messy at times. Sure, I'll grant that. But having, you know, 201 people working, contributing, debating, and discussing, I think is better than 17. And those 201 are elected by the people, so that the entire state has somebody there that the people have confidence in will help represent, you know, their portion of the state when it comes to drawing, because we all know there's big differences in how you do it, urban or part rural, you know, et cetera, especially with the Senate districts. So I'm sort of confused that, one, this doesn't have, you know, the clarity. It's sort of a, again, over two-thirds are this fuzzy thing that's not included in the bill. And then, you know, it's for competitiveness. And I don't know of another state where half of their congressional districts changed party affiliation in an election. And, you know, frankly, I think that's the definition of competitive. So I'm trying to, you know, if maybe the author of the bill can, you know, enlighten a little bit on my concerns.
Sure. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Quam. So thank you for those comments and feedback. We haven't, as a body, drawn the maps because it's gone to the courts, and we've been really lucky that our districts aren't gerrymandered like other states. But this is to prevent that from happening and giving voters the confidence that those maps are being drawn fairly. So this bill outlines the principles that you would follow to draw the maps to give guidance to the independent commission, and we put those in the Constitution. And so I think the underlying bills that would underlie this would have to be developed in a bipartisan way in the legislature where we come to agreement. And I am very happy to work across the aisle and get feedback on how to improve it, change it, develop it. A bill is moving through the Senate. Senator Kiffmeyer is carrying a constitutional amendment bill. And there's some differences, but I hope that we can work something out and put it on the ballot to ask voters whether they think we should continue drawing the maps or if we should have an independent commission.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, you know, frankly, one of the things with the current system is that the legislature has its discussion and debates, and when it does go to the judges, they have a large amount of data, public input, and etc. To work with when they go forward. But you know, with no guarantee of how these 12 might be selected, you know, which is again two-thirds of it, and the fact that no one in the in this pool looks to be elected. I always feel that the people, we're here for the people's voice. They chose us for a reason, and it's closer to decisions we make, and the judges, which are also elected, are closer to the people and are directly responsible to the people. And by moving it to this type of group, you are now separated from the people by at least one step. And since we have no clarity on the chalk dust of what the vast majority of this body to be created is selected, it could be multiple steps removed from the selection of the people. So it's not trivial to meddle in our Constitution. It's a major endeavor, and if we don't have it well thought through and all the details well defined and worked out, I think we have a real risk of unintended consequences, and that's the base of a lot of my concerns.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Nelson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Schultz, I guess the question I have, is this just going to be for the legislative offices, the commission, or are we going to be using the same procedure for cities, townships, or like in the old 3 years when we have to do the, this committee is in charge of doing the Met Council redistricting. So is this just the legislative districts or is this all redistricting?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Nelson, I'm going to answer, but I'm going to defer to Mr. Gehring if I say something incorrectly. Right now, it's for legislative and congressional districts.
Mr. Gehring is nodding. Representative Nelson.
So then, Mr. Chair, so then in the old 3 years that when we as the legislature redistrict the Met Council or other districts that run or the cities do their redistricting, we wouldn't have anything to do with that. This wouldn't cover that.
Correct.
Representative. Okay. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. I'm just trying to understand the crux of the bill. Can you tell me how our democracy is in jeopardy? You said that it was in jeopardy in your intro, and I'm just wondering, after 200 and some odd years of forging ahead, what's going on right now that this bill is going to solve?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nash. I believe many people are feeling their vote doesn't matter, and our democracy is built on a public with a right to vote. And so I fear that they'll lose trust in our structure of our government and how it runs, and that they will just fail to vote and be part of that process if they don't think their vote counts.
Representative Nash.
Well, and Mr. Chair, and to the author, we had a record turnout this past election. So, I'm confused that, you know, scary words are intended to put people into action. I'm not too scared other than by the content of the bill. When you say that we're in jeopardy, I mean, we're not being invaded by a foreign entity, we're not being overtaken, we're not being overrun, we had record voting turnout. I guess I'm just confused, but I guess are you saying that you're afraid of hyper-partisanship? Is that what you're saying?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't want to see Minnesota polarized. I would like to see more moderates elected that can come to agreement and have bipartisan solutions on working on legislation. But in many states, there have been bills introduced to disenfranchise voters to make it more difficult to vote as well. And so that's why there's the sense that many people, there are many groups of individuals that have an unclear idea of how to vote, that they are able to vote or how to register to vote. So I think there are many people here are trying to make it easier to vote to increase voter participation, even higher levels. So, historically Minnesota has had high voter participation, but there are many people that still are not participating in the process. And so making it easier to vote, making sure that the public understands the process is fair, that people's are represented, that it reflects the popular vote. And it hasn't happened in Minnesota that we've had gerrymandered districts, and we don't want that to happen. So this would prevent the power of one party drawing the maps and giving that to an independent commission.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of confusing words there. Representative Schultz says that we haven't had gerrymandering. We don't have gerrymandering. And yet this bill is set out to solve something that isn't happening. So that's confusing to me. And I appreciate her saying that she doesn't want hyper-partisanship and that's something that she's trying to solve. But I don't know how this bill gets more people to vote, doesn't have any mechanism to get people out to vote. I'm just confused by this bill. I think it's a really poorly executed attempt to help people think that this is going to drive participation. It isn't. This bill has nothing to do with voter turnout. This bill has nothing to do with people feeling like their vote matters. And by your own admission, we don't have gerrymandering, and yet we're trying to pass a bill or put a constitutional amendment on the ballot to make sure that we're solving something that doesn't exist. So I'm almost done. Thank you.
Yeah, Representative Nash.
I'm just confused as to how this is going to fix any of the problems that you've actually articulated. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Schultz, I have a couple questions.
Can I respond quickly? Sure. I was responding to your question about why I said democracy is in jeopardy, not what was in this bill. So when I'm talking about voter disenfranchisement and bills to reduce people's ability to vote, that's what I was responding to, your question on democracy.
Representative Schultz, just to Representative Nash's point, I mean, he said this is something that isn't happening, and it's true, it hasn't happened here in the last couple cycles, redistricting cycles, mainly because we've had divided, we have had divided government, and it's gone to, I know, a panel of judges to draw our district lines, and as a result, I would say they've been fairly fair and fairly competitive. Is there any guarantee that that will continue to happen in Minnesota? Is it possible we might see a sweep of either the DFL or the GOP or our two new major pro-marijuana parties, for that matter, in a subsequent election, and they would be then be in charge of drawing all the district lines?
You're right, Mr. Chair. I think we've been lucky that it's gone to a group of judges, but it hasn't been very transparent. The public has not been very involved when the courts draw those maps. And if you care about transparency in government, then that's not the ideal process to follow. So we have been lucky that hasn't happened. It's much easier to pass this type of legislation before we know who's in control and draws the maps. If one party takes control in 2020, we could see gerrymandering. Yes. And it's too late then.
And has it happened in other states, I guess I would ask? I mean, are there states where, for example, you've had 60% of the state population vote one way, but then the 40% party, if you will, has essentially been able to still maintain a supermajority because of the way the district lines are drawn? It's that sort of thing happened?
Yes, that has happened in Wisconsin, and those have been to the courts to find out whether there's been gerrymandering, and in fact there has been.
Has it happened? I mean, I've heard it's happened, like, both parties. I think I heard that Maryland, mm-hmm. for example, mm-hmm. was arguably gerrymandered by Democrats as well.
I believe that's correct.
And has the U.S. Supreme Court been shown any willingness to come up with any sort of guidance, or has it been willing to strike down any of these arguably gerrymandered states?
Yes, Mr. Chair, some states have had to redo their maps because it has been found to be gerrymandered. And right now, the difficulty is measuring, having some solid metrics on what determines whether they're gerrymandered.
I believe they may have struck down individual districts, but as when you're talking about like a whole redistricting map of a state as a whole, I know that just came up in Wisconsin, which you mentioned recently, and the Supreme Court said there's, you know, it might be able to find an individual district doesn't meet redistricting guidelines, but or districting principles, but I'm pretty sure they haven't been willing to strike down just a map as a whole. So I'm getting off track. I should probably continue with the list. Representative Heimrich.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Schultz. I share some of Representative Quam's concerns and just wanted to point out a few things that are kind of concerning here on 1.21 and 1.22 in reference to the 12 public members. So there's five judges and 12 public members. It says a public member must be eligible to vote but must not have been deeply engaged in partisan politics during the previous decade. It seems to me that you know, deeply engaged is a kind of a broad term, open to interpretation. Can you, you know, as a deeply engaged person, somebody that might have donated to a party, is a deeply engaged person if you door knocked or put up a sign, or what level or what would you assign to that that description of deeply engaged?
Representative Schultz.
If we're not happy with that language, I'm open to amending the language to get bipartisan support or defining how involved people should or should not be. I don't meet many people that are nonpartisan.
Representative Heinrich.
Okay. Thank you for that, Representative Schultz. Well, I certainly would look forward to learning more about this. My concern is that it is really broad, so certainly I'd like more definitive direction on how exactly those members are chosen. I think it's pretty clear how the five judges are chosen. I don't know, you know, to the chair's point as far as any guarantee of the future. I don't see any guarantee how this commission would prevent gerrymandering either, especially because of the broad terms used in how these 12 people and who these 12 people would be. You did mention that many states had gerrymandered maps, and you mentioned Wisconsin. Can you mention a few other states that have gerrymandered maps?
Representative Schultz?
I'd rather stay to the content of the bill. We can talk offline about the other states if you'd like. I would like to say that I don't know how much time you want to spend on process. The next bill I believe you're going to be hearing has specific language about how those 12 members could be selected.
Thank you, Representative. Mr. Chair, if I could turn your attention to 2.8, 2.9. The commission must request advice on how to define communities of interest. I'm just wondering what that looks like. That also seems kind of an obtuse idea. What, in your mind, would be a community of interest?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. That is also going to be more specific in the next bill.
Okay.
And if you are very interested, you can look up the other files that the other half of this bill that was not moved forward to this committee. I can give you that language, or you can look in file House File 1605 or 1018 as amended.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. Chairman, can you where is the – what other committee has the other half?
We do. We're taking it up next.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah. Thank you, Representative Heinrich. I should clarify what I said earlier before, too. House Research corrected me. The Supreme Court involvement has involved cases of racial gerrymandering, and what we're talking about here is political gerrymandering. So the Supreme Court has not gotten involved in political gerrymandering cases. They've had very split decisions on it. Representative Zerwas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess, to Representative Schultz, I'm concerned that several of your answers for questions have kind of resorted to, well, the next bill will fix that. What you're proposing is a constitutional amendment for us to place in the Constitution of the state of Minnesota. All of the ambiguity in this language would be embedded in our state constitution. And so the idea that Representative Dean is going to come before the committee next with a bill that answers all the concerns and issues we have with your constitutional amendment doesn't work. I mean, this is what voters will vote on come November, not what someone might come to the table with next that may, if it passes, clear up the ambiguity of your language. And so, I mean, that doesn't make sense. And so I guess I have real concerns with the bill itself. I have really concerns with kind of how you've framed it around kind of the crisis of voter confidence or voter participation. I was at a presentation where the Secretary of State was talking about the highest voter turnout in the history of Minnesota and the most engaged 18 to 25-year-old vote in the history of the state of Minnesota. And so you're talking about this engagement crisis, and you're talking about all this concern as a reason to do this. And A, I'm wondering if your underlying premise has any stats or data to back that up, that which you want to mount this proposal to amend our state's constitution. Are there facts and data behind that, or is it your feeling? Because the data I've seen does not support what you're asserting today.
Representative Zerwas, I know it's not uncommon for state constitutional, proposed constitutional amendments to set out kind of broad outlines and then the legislature to subsequently fill in the details. But Representative Schultz, do you have any response?
I was going to say the exact same thing, Mr. Chair, but it's my fear of what could happen. And it's my, when I talk about voter participation, that was related to my comment about our democracy in this country. The bill, having an independent commission, is to prevent future gerrymandering, and that's to not lead to polarization in our legislature, so we can get the work done that Minnesota wants us to get done in a bipartisan way. And so I think it's common for not to have all of the language in a constitutional amendment bill, because this will go to a rules committee ultimately, and to have an underlying language be worked on in the future. And I know that Senator Kiffmeyer's bill is also very basic regarding the constitutional amendment, with guidance moving forward on establishing what that independent commission would look like. But I'm happy to put that language back in the bill.
Representative Zerwas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And at this point, I would not support this bill moving forward. I would not support any amendments to our Constitution based on Representative Schultz's fears about what might happen at some future point. I don't think it's a good use of this committee or this legislature's time. I would make a motion to lay this bill on the table, and I'd request a roll call.
Okay, and that's a non-debatable motion, right? So roll call, motion's been made to table the bill, roll call's been requested. Clerk will take, well, actually, give us a second just to get out the roll call sheets. It's a little...
Okay, Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Elkins. Representative Gomez.
No.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Pawlowski.
Yes.
Representative Sauk.
No.
Representative Zerwas.
Yes.
Representative Heinrich.
Yes.
Representative Lehman.
Yes.
Representative Nash.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Tice.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative West.
There being 8 ayes and 9 nays, the motion to table does not prevail. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I need some clarification to make sure I'm interpreting right. In your legislation, you've got on 1.14, 12 public members, and then going down to 1.21, it says a public member must be eligible to vote but not have been deeply engaged in partisan politics in the previous decade. So is that referring to just one of the public members or all of the public members? Representative Schultz.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mason, that refers to each of the members, so all of the public members.
Okay. Representative Mason.
Okay. Then I guess I would take issue with that. I mean, I too come across a number of people who have never voted, who don't believe their vote counts, et cetera, et cetera. And my thought would be that people that are the ones that are voting probably have the most experience and insight into dealing with this. So I guess my suggestion would be to limit, if you want to have somebody that's not nonpartisan or whatever it is, maybe to pick a few. But to have all 12 of them not be engaged, I think you're missing out on a lot of important expertise. Yeah.
Representative Schultz.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mason, this was going to not being an elected office, not being in a partisan elected office. And so I think that was going to their involvement in a partisan office and trying to get members that could be more, fair perceived as fair and bipartisan.
Okay. Representative Mason.
And again, I going back to, was it 1.14, it does say such as a legislator, but I guess my thought is the definition needs to be, should be much more detailed than this one is. I'm not really comfortable with 121.
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I am open to modifying the language. This is a work in progress, and I hope to get along the lines more bipartisan support by working on this legislation with members here and with members in the Senate.
Representative Bonner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schultz, first I want to thank you for bringing this forward. I really appreciate that. I will tell you in full disclosure, I am a little concerned that we might want to clarify that language in 1.1 as well. However, to some of the points that were brought up earlier, I just wanted to state that, you know, we talked a little bit about why do we want to address this now and not later. I think when we talked about some of the crises that happens with the banks, you know, we said it's okay to have insiders helping write the rules. We saw how that turned out. I'm not really sure that we want to set the precedent that we're going to wait until that happens in order to take action. I think that's kind of actually irresponsible as a legislative body and as a state for us to do that. We recently had independent commissions that came forward to talk about the salaries for the folks in this room, because the people basically came forward and said, you know, it's really probably a bad idea for legislators to be determining their own pay. That's a bad idea. And I think the same holds true when we talk about legislative districts. Having legislators weighing in on what their district should look like, that seems like a clear conflict of interest. And I think that the attempt here today to lay out a provision that really takes that out of our hands and puts it in a more nonpartisan fashion that is equal and fair, that we know ensures that our elections are fair, that democracy is served, I think is in the best interest of the people of our state. And I think this just makes good sense. It makes common sense, quite frankly. And I think most Minnesotans would agree with that. So asking Minnesotans to be able to decide if we should, in fact, have a nonpartisan panel of folks who are actually deciding how those lines are drawn, I think is completely reasonable and fair. And I think the people of Minnesota should be able to have that option.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Schultz, to the point that was made earlier about the last two maps not being gerrymandered, and I think the chair alluded to this because of the divided government. Can you actually tell us why the courts have to intervene?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative, so the courts had to intervene because the legislature couldn't come to an agreement on the maps that were drawn by each party.
Okay. Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Schultz. So do you know, have there been any court challenges to the court-drawn maps of the last two?
Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. They may have. I'm not aware. In Wisconsin, they spent over $4 million litigating some of their maps. But in Minnesota, I'd have to defer to Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Gehring.
Mr. Representative Lee, I'm not familiar with any cases that have been filed to challenge the order of the districting panel in Minnesota.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, Representative Shaw, thank you for bringing this forward, too. And I am in the mindset that if there haven't been any challenges to the last two court-drawn maps for the state of Minnesota, I believe that we should, you know, let the people of Minnesota decide if a commission of retired judges and public members should be able to, you know, take the responsibility of having to redraw the boundaries and maps of the state of Minnesota and not for legislators. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Heinrich, did you have a
add-on? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask
the bill's author, Representative Schultz. I asked a question earlier in regards to the wording of deeply engaged in partisan politics, and I believe Representative Mason asked the same question, but I think I heard a different answer to that question after Representative Mason asked it, and I just wanted to confirm or ask you, must not have been deeply engaged in partisan politics. When you answered Representative Mason, it seemed like you said something to the effect of that you were intending on them not being elected officials. And so that was the, I guess, the intent of that language. And I just wanted to ask, is that the intent of that language is deeply engaged? Would you classify that as a past elected official?
Representative Schultz.
I'm open to defining that with in a bipartisan way of what that would exclude, who that would exclude. But, you know, I think when we initially wrote that, we were intending not to have a partisan in a partisan office as elected official. It's part of that definition.
Thank you, Representative. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Representative Zerwas, did you have something?
Yes.
Oh, to wrap up. Okay. All right. Yes. Representative Cagle and then Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And there's also elected officials that are nonpartisan. So, you know, judges are nonpartisan. They're elected. City councilors are nonpartisan. And so that could be, you know, having those folks on the panel. And I think it's a really good idea that, you know, voters pick us and we not pick our voters. And so anything that opens up that conversation to, you know, how this is a fair system. I think that we've really run across a big problem of elected officials picking their own voters. So, thank you.
Thank you. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm saddened that members of this committee do not believe in the integrity of our body and that we are not capable of making fair and principled decisions.
Okay. I don't have anyone else on the list, so Representative Zerwas.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the author. Thank you to Representative Mason. Thank you to Representative Bonner, who all expressed interest in continuing to work on this language because it was just not there yet. And so with that, Mr. Chair, I'd move to amend the motion to send this bill back to the Elections Subcommittee, and I'd ask for a roll call. That way we can continue to work on the language until we have it right.
So the motion is to amend the motion to send this back to the Elections Subcommittee. Roll call has been requested. Clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Elkins? Representative Gomez?
No.
Representative Cagle?
No.
Representative Lee?
No.
Representative Lilly?
No.
Representative Mason?
Yes.
Representative Nelson?
No.
Representative Pawlowski?
Yes.
Representative Sauk?
Yes.
Representative Zerwas? Representative Heinrich?
Yes.
Representative Lehman?
Yes.
Representative Nash?
Yes.
Representative Quam?
Yes.
Representative Tice?
Yes.
Representative Vogel?
Yes.
Representative West?
Okay, so there being 10 ayes and 7 nays, the motion has prevailed. So the motion has been amended. This is my motion, so I'm going to withdraw my motion. I'm going to lay this bill on the table. Representative Dean, House File 1603. Thank you, Representative Schultz.
Thank you. And I just could refer members to Article 3 of this original file that has all of the detailed language and definitions that you were looking for.
Representative Dean.
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Yes. So I will move that House File 1603 be recommended to pass and referred to the Ways and Means Committee. And do we need to adopt the subcommittee engrossment? Okay. So I will move that we adopt the subcommittee engrossment to put the bill in the shape that Chair Dean would like. Okay. Any discussion? All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. The bill is in the shape you'd like. If you could please present the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Previously, I went through all topic sections within the bill in Elections Committee. I'm happy to do that again. I do know that there are a couple amendments, and we might want to go ahead and take those because one of them will allow me to actually skip one of the topic areas within the summary.
Okay, I'm sorry.
There's an A19-0216.
Okay, I will move the A19-0216 amendment. Did you want to explain that, or does this also kind of put in the shape you like?
Sure. No. Well, I mean, what it does is we're just changing the date around the access to multi-unit dwellings for census workers to extend it from July 1st to December 31st, because occasionally the census has a need at times to go back into some buildings and do some follow-ups and things like that. So they sort of keep that period open for which the workers can actually make sure that they're that their data and they're getting all the people that we need to get.
Mr. Gehring has a comment.
Mr. Chair and committee members, just to clarify the status of this amendment, the A19-0216 is drafted to the DE amendment, which was the document that was before the election subcommittee, and the document that's in front of the committee right now is the subcommittee engrossment. So the page and line references on that amendment are incorrect, and so to accurately adopt that amendment, the 216 amendment would need to refer to page 84, line 18, and then make the date change as suggested there.
Okay. So with that technical change to the A19-216 amendment, is there any discussion to the amendment?
Mr. Chair,
yes.
Clarification. So what we have the DE1 is not before us, and that we aren't planning to do the DE1?
Mr. Gehring?
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam and committee members, what you have in front of you is the first subcommittee engrossment. It should be in your packet. This reflects the work that the election subcommittee did, so you don't have a DE amendment that you're working off of today.
Representative Quam.
So, and we will not see the DE amendment.
Mr. Chair, Representative Quam, the DE amendment is reflected in the subcommittee engrossment that you have in front of you.
So it may have been included in the packets by accident, Representative Quam. Yeah. Yes, no, I have it as well. So, should this be clarified to say moves to amend the subcommittee instead of the DE? Mr. Gehring?
Yes. So, Mr. Chair, this A19-0216, which was drafted before the subcommittee engrossment was available, is being technically corrected to reflect an amendment to the subcommittee engrossment, which is the document you should have in front of you. And then the page and line references, page 84, line 18, delete July 1st and insert December 31st.
Mr. Chair, thank you for the clarification and, you know, both for members and the people listening.
So all those in favor of the A19-0216 amendment as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries.
And Mr. Chair and members,
Chair Dean.
There's another amendment, the A19-0217 as well.
Okay, and I noticed that is drafted to the subcommittee engrossment, Mr. Gehring, so is this amendment in proper form?
So, Mr. Chair, on this one, since this one also was drafted before the engrossment was available, the page line or the page reference is not in the amendment, so we can fix that quickly.
And if I could speak to that amendment,
sure,
while we're figuring out which
sure,
actually
sure
page numbers. Mr. Chair and members, after some conversations with the original bill author and with some other individuals, the intent of the original bill, House File 979, was so that all renters would be given a registration, voter registration, at the time of the implementation of a new lease. And there were a lot of requirements for those landlords to include things like polling locations and all those other pieces that enable and help individuals to vote. And when we step back and look at the number of people that would be impacted as renters and the number of landlords that would be impacted as landlords, we just felt that the major portion of voters are currently taking place in Minneapolis and St. Paul because they have this ordinance. But we thought that there's probably a little bit more work that needs to be done to work with the folks at the Multi-Housing Association as well as the bill author to make sure that we get this exactly where we want it. So this is something that may end up coming back to us at another time. But for the sake of the omnibus bill moving forward, this amendment was put forward to remove that and have one thing that we're not going to be sort of talking about, which has could use a little bit more resolution that will be resolved.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Gehring, do you have the page numbers?
So, Mr. Chair, on the A19-0217 amendment, what you're amending is page 8, delete section 9, and page 47, delete section 72. So those are both sections in Article 1 that reflect the content that Representative Dean just described.
Okay. Any discussion? Okay. To the amendment?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Bonner?
Do you mean page 48, Mr. Gehring? Section 72?
It does appear that section 72.
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Bonner, yes. Page 48, delete
okay.
section 72.
Chair Feinberg, if I could have Mr. Reynolds, who represents the Association of
really briefly,
Multifamily
identify
housing.
Yourself for the record and
thank
proceed
you.
With your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, John Reynolds, Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. Just wanted to say thank you to Chair Dean and Representative Gomez for their willingness to hear our perspective and to have continued discussions about this provision. We really appreciate it. And that's all. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you. Any additional discussion? If seeing none, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries. Representative Dean, please proceed with your bill.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I am going to do this a little bit different than I did it in the election subcommittee. I'm going to start with the topic, and then we will go to what locations and where it's located in the current engrossment. So the first one is House File 45. Representative Schultz's bill on automatic voter registration that is located in sections 1 and 8. The next bill is Representative Hewitt's bill on school board vacancies, which is located in section 2. The third bill included is House File 489, which is mine, which is included as amended in involving transit service on election day. That's in sections 3, 36, 71. Next bill is House File 40, mine as well, which is restoration of voting rights, and that's in 4, 6, 10, 37, 70, and 73. The next bill is House File 1371, Representative Long, regarding early voting. That is in sections 5, 11 through 13,
16, 20, 21, 23 through 32, 59 and 60, and 75 through 77. Excuse me, the next bill included is House File 1372, Representative Long, that was also amended in subcommittee, and that's involves permanent absentee voters, which is in sections 14, 17, 18, and 22. The next topic is presidential national primary, which was House File 1153, and that also was amended in the subcommittee, and that's located in sections 7, 37, and 64 through 68. The next topic area we just removed with the amendment. The one following that is electronic transmission of absentee voting materials, House File 1152, Chair Freiberg, and that was amended as well in subcommittee, and that is located in sections 15 and 35. The next topic area is in-person absentee voting locations, which is House File 1818, Representative Bernardi, and that is located in section 19. Excuse me. The next topic is electronic voting systems, also Representative Bernardi, House File 1098, as amended in the subcommittee. That is 33, 39, 56, 57, and 61. The next is elections by mail, which is this bill, House File 1603, which involves townships fewer than 400, and that's in Section 40. House File 94 is Representative Bangs' bill, which is assisting voters in polling places, located in Section 38. Special election timeline, which is Representative Sundin's bill that was amended in subcommittee, which is in House File 1628, and that is located in Sections 40 through 44. next topic is ranked choice voting, which is Representative Elkins' bill, House File 983, located in sections 45 through 55 and 58, 60, 62, and 63. the next topic is National Popular Vote Interstate Compact, Representative Leschin's bill, House File 1941, located in section 69. The next section is the HAVA Election Security Appropriation, Chair Nelson's bill, House File 14, that's located in Section 74. The next article is campaign finance. We have a section on that involves Hennepin County elections, House File 1994, Chair Fiverr's bill as amended in the subcommittee, and that is Sections 1 through 9, 11 through 14, 16 through 21, 26 and 27. The next topic area is expressly advocating Representative Bonner's bill, House File 2050, and that's located in Section 6. Following topic area is non-campaign disbursement for security-related expenses. That's Representative Lucero, and that House File 673, and that was inserted with some modifications in Section 10. The next is Electionary Communications, House File 2050, Representative Bonner's bill, located in Sections 15, 20, 22, and 25. And we're almost done, Mr. Chair and members. The next article is on the census and redistricting, regarding redistricting advisory commission, districting principles, the LCC duties related to redistricting, and redistricting of local governments. All of those were in House File 1605, Representative Cleavorn, and those are located in sections in Article 3 and 1, 6, 2, 3, and 4. And the last topic is access to multi-unit residential facilities for U.S. Census workers, House File 2059, Representative Lee, and we also made some modifications into this bill, and we just made some amendments to that article in Section 5 within that. So with that, that's the bill, Chair Freiberg and members, and I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Chair Dean. Is there anybody who would like to testify on House File 1603? Please come forward, identify yourself for the tape, and proceed with your testimony. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Anastasia Belladonna Cajera. I'm the Executive Director for Common Cause Minnesota. We are a nonpartisan organization working on various issues of democracy. Redistricting is one of the issues that I'm here to speak to and support, particularly Article 3 of the bill in front of you. The context that you see in this on these pages, I really think is important for you all to know about. The information you see in front of you is a culmination of over, almost actually, 3 years of a statewide, multi-partisan effort to come up with a model that would be fair and keep Minnesota voters in front of that process. Some of you might see some bits and pieces here and there of you in here on both sides of the table because, again, the effort was to make sure that it was something that was inclusive. It was also something that Representative Schultz mentioned that our Representative Cleburne has put forward. We believe that this is the best model to go with because it is a both-and model. And to the prior testifier's credit, it does not chop off your arm to fix something that has to do with a wrist. I do want to thank all of the members here that have met with us and have met with different coalition members on this issue. I want to thank the leadership, Representative Freiberg and Representative Dean on this as well. But I also do want to stress our concern about moving forward with something as drastic as a constitutional amendment within the context of the ideas that have already been shared. Nationally speaking,
we are not, just so you're aware, we're not moving forward with a constitutional amendment at this point.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Well, then I am here to absolutely support everything that is engaged and included in this particular model and in these pages because of the reasons why I just mentioned. Thank you so much for your time. And I look forward to continuing to hear about the progress within this committee on other matters as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Welcome, please. You'll be second. Please identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jason Flores. I'm the State Director for Americans for Prosperity here in Minnesota. On behalf of our activists across the state, I want to address some concerns and urge you to vote no on the portions of this bill that originated in House File 2050 that relate to electioneering and express advocacy and changes to definitions surrounding those. Americans for Prosperity stands firmly in support of the right of all Americans to participate in civic engagement, and this legislation would only limit discourse and undermine free speech. The ability to think, speak, and engage allows all individuals to challenge social, scientific, and political issues that affect their lives and their communities. Free to choose to privately come together, people can join causes that they believe in without fear or intervention or retaliation by those in government. This protects all voices, especially the most marginalized. The provisions that originated in House File 2050 would chill protected speech by mandating the disclosure of donors who give to organizations to support their general missions. These donors may never see, hear, or be made aware of the express communications that this bill seeks to regulate, but who may nevertheless be associated with them. For example, if somebody donates to an organization because of the work that they do on criminal justice reform, this provision would force them to take ownership of everything that the organization is involved in. Donors will be deterred from donating to good causes for fear that their names may end up on a government registry, because those organizations took other positions on legislation or issues, positions with which those donors may even disagree. Transparency is good for government accountability and oversight, but individuals have the right to privacy. Just as Americans have the right to cast ballots in private, we have the right to support causes, join groups, and make donations without being monitored by the government. And history shows these freedoms protect minority voices, those fighting against injustices that are entrenched in the status quo. There's a long tradition in the U.S. going all the way back to our founding of anonymous philanthropy as well as anonymous writing on matters of public interest. When Alabama tried to force the NAACP to reveal its member list during Jim Crow, The Supreme Court held that the First Amendment protects private associations from being exposed to threats, intimidation, and violence. Even today, people who have made modest donations to groups that expressed unpopular views have lost their jobs and faced harassment when their affiliations were leaked. Those in power shouldn't force individuals to register their beliefs, their donations, or their associations. The requirement to disclose donors' names puts their safety at risk and will result in a country that allows government-facilitated intimidation to control our legislative process and public discourse. Too often, these types of requirements are designed to make it harder to critique those in power, and it shields the political class from the voices of everyday citizens who want to make their viewpoints known to their elected officials. While the lobbyists and the well-connected will still find a way to play their inside game, everyday citizens who want to make their voices heard will have those voices taken away. Thank you for the opportunity to share our concerns about the pieces of this bill in front of you that originated in House File 2050. Mr. Chair, committee members, thank you.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please come forward, state your name, and present your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is George Beck. I'm chair of Minnesota Citizens for Clean Elections. I'm a past chair of the Campaign Finance Board. I'm here to express my organization's strong support for the Omnibus Elections Bill. It's the most significant bill that I can remember, and Mr. Chair, I go back quite a ways. There's a lot to be proud of here, and I think the authors and in the legislation and the co-authors have a lot to be proud of in bringing this bill together and forward, and of course Representative Dean. Just briefly, it eliminates the loophole in our disclosure law that permits secret contributors to fund negative phony issue ads shortly before an election. We're going to know, if this passes, we're going to know who is supporting the candidates, which is an important part of selecting who to vote for. I want to note that there will be no registry of contributors under this bill, and there will still be free speech. The only thing this bill asks is who's speaking. Most contributions in Minnesota are disclosed, but this is one small area that has been neglected. About 19 other states have plugged this loophole, and there's no reason why Minnesota shouldn't do the same thing. The bill also establishes an advisory commission to draw voting maps in 2021. It will help us avoid the unconstitutional mistake made in Wisconsin in 2011, where 40% of statewide voters elected 60% of the assembly due to gerrymandering. That's simply undemocratic, and it disenfranchised the voters in the districts that were gerrymandered. Legislators have an inherent conflict of interest in drawing maps. There should be an independent body advising you about that. Importantly, the bill would allow cities and counties to adopt ranked choice voting if they want to do so. That would provide election victors with majority support and eliminate high-cost primaries. The bill also allows Minnesota to award its electors according to the national popular vote if other states with 270 votes agree to do so. That means that the majority vote in this country will elect our president, something that is strongly supported. Most Minnesotans, Republicans and Democrats alike, support these changes. Please vote in their favor. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else who would like to testify? Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cindy Geis. I am the Community Services Director for Scott County. I am also the Scott County Auditor Treasurer appointed by the board. I want to thank the authors of the many bills that that came up and got entered into this this omnibus bill that's being presented today. There is one area of concern for our county, as I discussed this with my administrator and with our county board, and it has to do in the Article 3 and the redistricting of the local election offices. And one of the things I wanted to make abundantly clear to this this committee is maybe the procedures that we go under when we do redistricting at the county level and what our relationship is with our cities. With our cities, after the congressional and the legislative districts are mapped and drawn and they have been approved, it goes to our city councils and our townships first, where they have to then approve their precinct boundaries. The county is heavily involved in that process in that they don't have the staff on, not in Scott County anyway, they don't have the staff on hand to help them draw their precinct boundaries. So we help that those cities and the townships with their legal boundaries, with ensuring that they meet all of the requirements of their precincts that adhere to the redistricting laws. One of the issues with the redistricting of the local county offices is that because we weigh so heavily into the township and the city process, we set up a commission of our own, appointed by the board, to go out, and we have members of our GIS, our county surveyors group, and some of the other officials that really understand the and have the ability to draw up these districts that meet all of the confines of this law, of the current redistricting laws. And we bring back at least six or seven different plans that we present in public hearings where we can have the public weigh in on those plans and can help drive the consensus on which plan is finally adopted. We have no costs affiliated with our process that we currently have, and our concern is that if we have the district court assign a member committee of 7 to 14 members, who's going to pay for that? I don't think it is. It right now, I'm thinking that the county government would have to pay for that, and the soil and water conservation districts would have to pay for that, and they currently don't have the funding to have other people come in and do some of the work that we've seen to have success in. So I just wanted to bring that to your concern that we are involved one way or the other because we do have our cities and our townships and our county that we have to help, and to bring in another set of bodies to do the county's work and have to pay them is just a big concern for my county board, and they're trying to really keep their budget at a minimum increase. So thank you for your consideration.
Thank you
for questions.
Yep. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Geis. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on this bill? Okay, seeing none, member discussion. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't sure. I was just getting on the list. I do have a question on the early voting. Are all the protections and oversights that are present for Election Day voting also involved and present for the early voting?
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair, I believe that the people that can currently vote either through absentee balloting, same-day registration, or individuals that are registered are the same the same rules that will apply with early voting.
Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So full access for observers is provided in your bill? Such as there is on Election Day?
Representative Dean.
Representative Freiberg, in full access for observers on Election Day, I believe, may fall outside of this. I know that we currently do early absentee voting, and I don't know if it's clarified relative to that. So, again, this is not something that I think got brought up at any other point, and if Mr. Gehring might be able to chime in on this, I would greatly appreciate it.
Sure. Mr. Gehring, is the Secretary of State's office here?
Mr. Chair, it's about the protections that are in this bill, and there's a big difference between early voting and absentee in-person voting, because for absentee ballots, there's a process, but when you're actually coming in early voting, like you do on Election Day, I would anticipate, since there's not an envelope, there's not the other procedures, I would anticipate, since this is just adding another election day where you can come in and vote, that there'd be the same protections. And one of the protections we have on election day is actually being able to allow observation of the process. And that's why I asked if, first of all, do we have the same protections as election day? And you seem to indicate yes, but so then it should have been automatic that we have the same observational protections of our election system.
Yeah,
Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, that's a detail in the law that I probably am not as well versed as the Secretary of State, and I believe he's here, and I think he'd be happy to come forward and speak to that issue.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Steve Simon, Minnesota Secretary of State. Representative Quam, good question. This wouldn't change anything about Minnesota law. Under Minnesota law, we have challengers, not observers. And explicitly under Minnesota law, under current law, which this is not changing, any absentee polling place, a county seat, a city hall, right now, where people can vote absentee in person is a polling place, and therefore challengers can be there. So typically the challengers are sent by political parties, sometimes by others, and of course any challenge under state law needs to be made based on personal knowledge, not just a hunch or a vibe or a feeling.
Representative Quam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then I'd hope the Secretary of State will please let the counties know, because the counties have restricted and not given notice when they've, you know, they've moved the time, location, and not have accessibility in rooms where they're counting absentee ballots, and haven't allowed observers or challengers to be able to access. We could probably come up with an extensive list of occasions like that, because I know I've had, I'm aware of people having, you know, to the Federal Election Commission and others made, raised concerns, and also, you know, I haven't seen the process in the counties of where you've got that form and there's authorized people that can sign that form to be able to have a person designated, and there are parameters around that. So I'm glad that that's in place. I'm sad that that has not been communicated to the counties, and I hope it will be in the future. And
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, to that directly, I see that Ms. Geis would be happy to come and speak to that directly, because the counties were brought in, and I'd like to give her the opportunity to respond.
Sure. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Geis. Please proceed with the answer.
Mr. Chair, members, we actually had someone that came to our county this last election, and they said that they were a challenger, and they wanted to see a certain process that is actually deemed private. So they were challenging, and they wanted to challenge the absentee in the absentee area. So we said, we have everything posted. Our absentee area is in that location. You have the right to be there. What you can challenge is the ability of that person by and through your own personal knowledge on whether they can vote or not. And he said, that's not what I want. I have the right to come into where you are opening your mail-in ballots and observe the ballot procedure. And I said, you have no authority. Those ballots are private. You have no authority at this time to go in and see a ballot and watch it be run through the machine. That is not a public process. That is a private process, because we do have the physical ballots in view, and there is no way that anybody other than the ballot boards and those people assigned by the county that can see those physical ballots. So there was a different, he challenged us, and he came back at least 4 or 5 days saying that those ballots and that process is public. And according to our state law, those ballots are private, so no challenger can be present when we open those.
Representative Quam.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm sorry, that instance actually was a election employee of the county you know, involved in the election judge activities and that when they had a single judge go off in a room by themselves, they brought up that we're supposed to have two in that process, and that person was said, well, you're not a team player, go home. And then when they arrived home, received a phone call saying they were no longer part of the election team. And that actually, I believe, was referenced to the federal elections. I'll have to double check that, but that actually was, I mean, isn't there specifications that two judges perform certain activities, and the restricting of it to only one and having it in a back room with one person by themselves, isn't that a violation?
Ms. Geis.
Mr. Chair, members, you are always to have two people when you're doing processes that deals with ballots. Our ballots, and I can't talk to what other counties or what a city may have done. I guess I wasn't privy to that experience. But, yes, in those counties, we have two people who are looking at ballots. They're accepting them when they get them in the mail, just like we do. Two people looking at them, is everything filled out correctly? That also can be actually an observer can watch, and our challenger can watch, and they can challenge the acceptance of a ballot when it's received in the mail, if they so choose. But after those ballots are approved and accepted by the ballot board, they go into an area where they are sealed, or they stay sealed, and they are locked up until the time frame by which we are going to open. And there is never any opening of ballots that should be done and running them through a tabulator where you do not have at least two people. So if that was being done by one person, that would be in violation of those procedures that the counties and the cities are supposed to follow when they're opening ballots that are mailed in.
Mr. Chair, I want to thank Ms. Geis for responding. And I know that we've got a few more other things. And I think, you know, we've addressed what the rules and the procedures are in statute on how we're supposed to do our elections. And if we want to talk about an incident that someone talked about occurring, you know, we could be here a long, long time.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move on to the next.
I would like to get other members an opportunity.
No, I understand, but this year we had at the beginning of this bill confusion about, you know, we got two different copies. We got confusion that we had to correct both the amendments because there was a confusion as to the page number and et cetera. And so, frankly, you know, what the actual copy was emailed out to us less than 24 hours ago. This is an extensive bill.
That was why I extended the amendment deadline, Representative Kwan. We do have the bill later tonight if you would like to go back to me.
I am fine to do the people's duty of going through something important like this. Now, there's 84 pages. It's fairly extensive. But in my review, I did not see anything that would allow the guarantee that every person that went to the poll was able to cast a ballot and that Minnesota would actually conform to HAVA and not be one of the three states exempted from having to have provisional ballots. Did I miss the provisional ballot portion of this bill?
Mr. Chair, Representative Kwan, there is not a provisional ballot section within this bill.
Representative Kwan?
Thank you. And looking at Section 70, page 47, through Section 73, page 49, and you're going over the restoration, and I see that you are making correctional facility personnel distribute voter registration and that they have to hand this out and inform that when they're released from the facility, not when they finish their sentence, they're given a notice that there's a restoration of your voting rights. Do they give this to every person as a released from the facility?
Mr. Chair and Representative Kwan, whenever anybody gets released from one of our locked-up facilities where we've had more than more than a county jail. There are a list of things that they go through as part of that release and part of that discharge. And this will just add one more thing to the list in which they have to go through, informing them of their ability to vote being restored upon their release. And it only seems reasonable that we would also then include as part of that the inclusion of a voter registration application.
Mr. Chair, so I'm concerned about one thing here, that we would be inviting someone to break the law because not everybody that's released would be able to register and vote, because we do have people that are not non-citizens that are in our jails. And therefore, I'm just concerned that you don't have any language to ensure that we aren't encouraging someone to break the law by registering and voting, because they're told, hey, you now have the right to vote, but they might not, because, you know, part of our prison population includes people that, if you're not a citizen, you can't legally vote.
Sure. Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, the actual voting application itself, registration application, actually talks about needing to be a citizen. And that a violation, when you register, you would actually probably not be accepted a registration if you could not state or prove citizenship as part of that registration. Now, when you begin to talk about voting, that's a whole other process. And that voting process, all of us, I'm assuming that when we go to the polls, we sign the poll book, and we actually are swearing to a statement that we are eligible to vote, and it's actually a felony to do that and misrepresent yourself. So that would not change any of this.
Mr. Chair, the point I was making is that we should not be encouraging anyone to break the law. And because there have been, and in fact, documentation at the federal level in cases where there have been people that are not citizens and have voted. In fact, I just would think that we would want to not take the chance of having, one of our employees soliciting someone or encouraging somebody to break the law, so they ought to have something on there that to be able to verify that.
Thank you for the comment, Representative Quam. Representative Nash.
Mr. Chair, I was not done with even that section, and you said we do have plenty of time to give this bill due diligence.
Representative Quam, I would like to have other opportunities, other members have the opportunity to ask questions as well.
Well, I understand that, but when you throw, the deadline, you said, well, we're exempted from that. You've got a large and extensive bill. I suppose if you don't need my input or allow my citizens to have my voice in going through the details of this, and you wish to, muzzle members, then go ahead.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I've served on this committee this is now my fifth year. And at this time of the year, we have the elections omnibus bill that comes before us. And it's always been a nonpartisan bill. Many of you have served on this committee with me. Chair Freiberg, you were there. Chair Nelson, you were the minority lead. Representative Lee, you were there. And the agreement that has always gone on in the last 20 years has been that this bill would be a bipartisan bill, that this bill would not contain any material that would be considered partisan, and that was for a standalone bill. If that's what you wanted to run, that's up to you. And when I was given this assignment to be the minority lead, to essentially be Representative Nelson, and I believe you were minority lead at one time, or maybe not, Mr. Chair.
Uncharted territory for me.
It was sweet.
When I was given that assignment, I thought, well, this is good. This will be an opportunity to be bipartisan. This is a good opportunity for us to roll up our sleeves and do the election work that everybody professes their undying love for bipartisanship. And we began the committee process. And it became very clear to me early on, after talking with the chair, that that was not his intent. And this goes all the way back to Governor Ventura. So for 20 years, Governor Ventura, Governor Pawlenty, Governor Dayton, all said that they were expecting that this would be a bipartisan bill. And I remember back to my time as a freshman that Chair Sanders said, if you aren't going to abide by that, then your bill will not get put into this omnibus bill. And they worked very closely with the minority leads. I remember for the last biennium, Representative Nelson, you were on that committee, and we almost never had roll call votes in that committee on the elections bills. And that bill came out of committee with no roll call because it was bipartisan. Hours were spent with you and Chair O'Driscoll in his office or your office or in committee making sure that the product, this, well, not this product, but a better product than this, that this was something that was important enough to Minnesotans that it was going to be bipartisan. So I began asking, well, who else has done this? Our current Secretary of State was chair, mandated, required that the bill be nonpartisan. And I will tell you, and it shouldn't surprise you because you've read the bill now and we've heard the bill, this is not that. This bill is loaded with partisan issues. And even at the admission of Chair Dean, this is a heavily partisan bill. Because we talked about it in my office, and he admitted to that this is not a bipartisan bill.
Mr. Chair, there are elements
of this bill that do have bipartisan authorship. But the requirement previously was that there would be unanimity in this bill. And here we are. I will tell you that in speaking with my caucus and with members of the election subcommittee, one of which was Chair O'Driscoll, shocked that this bill that to date has been a requirement of bipartisanship, that it would get the buy-in of all the members on that committee before it even left committee. And you were on the committee, Mr. Chair, Chair Nelson, Representative Lee, because it was an important enough thing for us to roll up our sleeves and put aside partisan differences and come together with a bill that many would say is probably the nerdiest bill in the place. Close. This is not that. There are things in here that my caucus will never support. Ever. That is not something that I think should go unmentioned in this committee today. This is something that, in my opinion, is so beyond the pale that we need to make sure that it is discussed. And as we move forward to a vote, I would hope that you would vote to return it to committee or lay it on the table or any number of options that are afforded to us, because this is not something that Minnesotans are asking for. They want an elections bill that is going to be a clean bill, that's going to come to the floor of the House of Representatives, and they will say every one of the House of Representative members put their shoulder to the grindstone or their nose to the grindstone, and this was a bill that was nonpartisan. Past chairs of the DFL have done this. Past chairs of the GOP have done this. Why can't we do that today? This bill is loaded with stuff that is hyper-partisan. And Representative Schultz said that she decries hyper-partisanship. Well, here we go. There's some hyper-partisanship right there. This is loaded with it. So, Mr. Chair, as we move forward, I hope that many of you that have done this in the past are going to vote to say that this is not a bill that you support, that if you support some of the provisions in these bills, that you would ask that they run separately, just like every other bill that when I was in the majority, we made sure that we did. So, Mr. Chair, I'll probably get back on the list here in a little bit, but I just wanted to set the frame of that and to conclude with the fact that the governors have required that in the past, and Governor Walz gave an interview with Brianna Beerschbach right before session, or as session was spinning up, and she asked him, do you support the notion of a bipartisan elections bill? And he came out very quickly and said, oh, yeah, absolutely, I do. But I sent a letter to the governor asking him to clarify that because I wanted to make sure that he was going to follow the tradition of other governors. And I finally got the letter back 2 days ago. And there was, in about a month's time, a fair amount of equivocation that happened. So now apparently the governor doesn't mind this being a hyperpartisan bill. But I think that you have the opportunity as members of the House of Representatives to say, we're going to take on the onus of responsibility, and we're going to put out a product. We're going to send a message to Minnesota that we want a nonpartisan election bill. Because, Chair Nelson, when you were there last year, we voted on a bill that was bipartisan, and you praised its bipartisanship. And I hope that we can have that same today. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair, and there was a lot that was said in the previous few minutes, and I would like to respond to some of those, if I may. It was always my intent to create a bipartisan bill. And some of the assertions that were put forth just aren't factually true. I mean, I'll tell you all right now that we only got a few Republican-authored elections bills. So this whole notion of how you create something bipartisan, and I don't see anything inherently partisan in any of these sections of the bill. We can make them partisan by the way we talk about them and about what we do, but you know, this bill is only bipartisan because it has Democratic authors on these issues. Minnesotans actually have asked for a lot of this stuff. That, you know, we know that when it comes to elections by themselves are inherently partisan because that's how we've set up a system to be inherently partisan. There's nothing with restoring the vote that is partisan. I mean, and to use Representative Nash's words earlier when he was speaking to the previous bill, he was saying that there's nothing in that bill that does anything to increase voter turnout. Well, there's a section in this bill that does do that. I know what we do here. I know that, you know, there are a lot of sections in this bill that some folks don't agree upon. I think we put together a pretty comprehensive bill, and just because for the last 20 years, elections omnibus bill that has come forward was 100% agreement in everybody being fine, you might also say that maybe that's why our election laws, we've been able to tweak a little bit here and there, but we've never been able to make some of those changes that make voting easier for people, make the ability of individuals to get registered to vote. Several states have done that. I've heard those concerns about, and I'm sure we'll get back to Representative Quam here at some point, that there are lots of people voting illegally in Minnesota. There's been tons of studies done on that, and that's just not true. Mr. Chair, I'm more than happy to talk about specific portions of this bill. And if members would like to address their questions to specific topics or sections of this bill, I would be happy to address those.
Representative Nash?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair and members, Representative Dean, when we first started this process, you and I had a meeting in my office, or your office, I believe, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was my question at the time, would this be a bipartisan bill? And your answer to that was that you did not see that was a requirement. Is that correct?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't believe I'm on trial.
Well,
I will respond to that. When we sat down, Representative Nash, I would say that we talked about bipartisanship, and we have a different understanding of what bipartisanship means. And I know in elections we talked about the difference between bicameral and bipartisan. Mm-hmm. The Senate is a Republican majority body in the state of Minnesota. Anything that passes out of this body will have to go through the Senate. And in order to make it through the Senate, it will have to be passed by a Republican majority. So we can argue the difference between bicameral versus bipartisan, but in my perception, that would make a bill that would ever make it to the governor as being a bipartisan bill. Now, yesterday we looked at an amendment that stripped a majority of these provisions within this bill. And I wish that we would have had some things that we would have talked specifically about possibly amending or taking out some of those sections of the bill. So to say that, or maybe not to say, but to assert that there's been no willingness to try to create a bipartisan bill, I would just say that I don't think that's the case. I think we've worked and we've tried to do that, but I'm not going to hold up things that Minnesotans have been asking to have happen for the sake of getting two or three provisions within the sections of this omnibus bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if I can ask the chair, what's the trajectory for this bill after the hearing today? Moving forward.
Representative Zerwas, after the previous bill today, I'm not sure what the trajectory of anything is or can be counted on, but...
Just here to help, Mr. Chair.
Representative Dean, if you have a response.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, this will be referred to Ways and Means, and they will determine what its next move is. If I was a betting man, I would bet that this would try to match up a little bit with what the Senate does. Regarding where they include their elections portion in their bills.
Representative Zerwas?
Mr. Chair, so is that, if I'm reading the tea leaves, Representative Dean, Chair Dean, is it your intention then to roll this in to Chair Nelson's stake of finance bill?
Representative Dean?
Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, I cannot intend to do anything with Chair Nelson's bill. Chair Nelson will decide what he does with his bill.
Okay. Representative Zerwas?
Mr. Chair, question again for the author. Have you had much as far as discussions with your Senate counterparts? Because as I understand, nearly all of the Senate provisions haven't moved and haven't had hearings on any of this. And multiple provisions within here don't even have Senate authors. So I'm wondering, if you're going to insert this into Chair Nelson's bill and basically make Chair Nelson's bill untouchable and automatically partisan, to what end if nothing is moving in the Senate? Aren't you, in effect, taking all of the agreed-upon stuff that the Secretary of State needs and kind of giving it a death sentence?
Representative Zerwas, you're very concerned with the other chamber, I know, this week. So I didn't know we always did care about the Senate, but Representative Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, you asked me sort of a few questions there, so I'll try to address those questions. I did sit down with my counterpart over in the Senate early on. And there was some question on if they would actually have an elections bill in the Senate this year. As a matter of fact, I heard that a statement was made that we've done a lot over the past several years. We don't need to do anything now. That's hearsay, and I'm just saying that I heard that that's what the chair over there had said. Just for the record, the Secretary of State's bill that is the technical bill is moving separately. It's not part of this bill. So I don't believe that I'm jeopardizing currently the Secretary of State's bill that I hope we're all going to support when it gets to the floor, because I think that that's critical as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Zerwas?
Mr. Chair, and I've heard the same thing from the chair over there, that they're just not going to do an elections bill this year. Do you think that decision by the Senate has anything to do with your decision for the first time in 20 years making this a blatantly political bill?
I don't know that he can speculate about motives or anything.
Oh, I'm just trying to guess.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, well, and Representative Zerwas, I don't think I made a decision to make this a blanketly partisan bill. So I would just question the way in which you phrased that. If that did happen, it wasn't because of conversation that I had with the senator. Because I didn't have any senator conversations with the senator about creating a bill that was bipartisan. I didn't talk about in order for me to pass any election stuff, it'll have to be agreed upon everyone in the state. So if the senator did move in that direction, it was because of conversations she had with other individuals.
Yeah. Representative Zerwas.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I think there are a few bipartisan provisions buried within this bill. You got to go deep, but it's in there. My concern is that by how you've packaged it, you've doomed those to failure. And so my request would be that perhaps the Elections Committee take another swipe at this and see if we can't get something that is a little bit more palatable. Mr. Chair, I'd make a motion to refer the bill to the election subcommittee.
Okay. A motion. Well, there already is a motion on the table, Representative.
Mr. Chair, I'll amend your. My motion will be to amend your motion, and I'll ask for a roll call.
Okay. The motion is to amend. This committee's in recess till the call of the chair. All right, I'm going to call this back to order. I apologize for leaving rather abruptly earlier. I felt like we were getting bogged down and kind of needed a break.
Did you have lunch?
I know, I certainly did. So thank you. But when we left, there was a motion on the table. It was the Zerwas motion to amend the motion to send the bill to the subcommittee. So that is still before us, and I believe there was a roll call requested for that. So we can discuss that motion some more if people want, or we could just vote on it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think for us, I think we've seen that this bill is a pretty significant variance from where we've been over the last 2-plus decades as an institution. We're going at least as far back to Governor Ventura's term in office that Governor Ventura, Governor Plenty, and Governor Dayton all insisted and the legislature complied with the idea that an elections policy bill shouldn't be a partisan or political bill and should be a combination of the best Republican and best Democrat ideas that the bodies could agree on. And so I think earlier Representative Nash had commented that in years past, in sessions past, that Chair Nelson, Chair Freiberg, Representative Lilly, and others, I think Representative Lee, and others have commented and commended previous election bill authors on how impressed you were that the bills were very deliberative, they were bipartisan, and there was no attempt by the majority to jam forward provisions that weren't broadly agreed upon bipartisan portions of the overlying elections bill. With with my good friend, the author of the bill and the chair of the election subcommittee, with Chair Dean's own comments earlier. That has not been his intent or his approach with this bill. And so the bill was passed out of the election subcommittee on a party line vote, and the bill now stands before us currently divided. And so I guess my concern is there are provisions within this bill that the majority supports and likes and would hope at the end of the day would become law. However, we believe that in response to this lopsided approach thus far, the Senate majority has made it pretty clear that they're not interested in an elections policy bill this year. And so we think that the positive provisions, the truly bipartisan provisions within this bill, will likely be lost for the session because of the unwillingness to meet in the middle. And so the motion that I had made prior to the recess, Mr. Chair, was to amend your motion and have this bill be re-referred back to the subcommittee on elections, where hopefully we can result in a truly bipartisan election bill that can not only get out of the subcommittee with a unanimous vote, but likely get out of operations with a strong bipartisan vote. And Mr. Chair, I think Representative Nash has a suggestion for moving forward.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and I'll go because I do see some new faces in the room. I support the Zerwas motion to send us back to the election subcommittee, and here's why. And I talked about this earlier, but it bears repeating. For 20 years, as Representative Zerwas said, 20 years we've had the requisite from the governor that they only wanted to see a bipartisan, relatively benign elections bill. And we brought that up in the election subcommittee, and we offered a DE amendment. And this is the amendment right here. This is what we offered yesterday, and it was voted down on party lines. But I want to caution the majority with this. This bill that, as Representative Zerwas said, has provisions in it that the minority supports will likely die completely because the Senate has indicated an unwillingness to pick up something that's going to be as controversial as this, what we have before us tonight. So if you are agreeable to it, I would recommend that we could actually recess right now, go back into recess. We could convene the subcommittee because the GOP members are here. We're willing to work. We're willing to work tonight to make sure that we have an elections bill that we can actually look at each of our constituents in the eye and say, we believe in bipartisan election bills. We want to carry on the tradition that has been largely supported by all parties. We had an independent, we had a Republican, we had a Democrat. What more do you want? We have people who have weighed in as the governor for a long time saying this is important. So I would suggest that we would recess. We could convene the election subcommittee. We could go forward. We'll adopt this amendment right here. We'll come back, because you can call it back in pretty easily, and we would then deal with the elections bill that we could all be proud of, because I've talked to several of the members that are here, and they all recognize that this is not a bipartisan bill. They recognize that this is something that is likely going to be very troubling when it gets transmitted to the Senate. So, Mr. Chair, I encourage you, again, as somebody who sat on this committee, Chair Nelson, wherever you are, there you are, Representative Lee, you've been here. This is important enough that I think that you want to do it right. I hope that you want to do it right. So the Republican side of this election subcommittee is here and ready to work. So I would suggest that we recess, we convene the election subcommittee, and get to work.
Thank you. I do not intend to recess at this time. I believe that the subcommittee has done good work putting together a good bill. I'm not, you know, I think Chair Dean put it very well that he said for any election-related bill to pass, it will need bipartisan support. There is a Republican majority in the Senate. It seems kind of artificial to set aside the work of the subcommittee at this point. Just because of that, I appreciate the members of the subcommittee that are here. I hope you find an interesting discussion. I don't know if you have those are my thoughts anyway, Chair Dean. I don't know if you have additional thoughts.
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I would defer to you as the chair. I think we have done a lot of work. We've had lots of conversations. The omnibus bill we're looking at has a bill that was introduced, moved within our committee, and included as part of this. There were several amendments that were GOP amendments that we took because they were good ideas. And we don't believe that we have all the answers in the DFL, just like I hope that the GOP doesn't believe they have all the answers. I would say that, you know, there are several parts of this bill that I don't think there's disagreement on, and I will acknowledge that. At the same time, there are several parts of this bill that I believe that many Minnesotans want us to see them move forward relative to our elections. And I know there probably are some Minnesotans who disagree with some of those principles. Minnesota is probably one of the most purple states we're going to find. We can just look at what's happened in our state legislature, whether it's the Senate or the House. It swings back and forth. Most of the people in the country think we're a really, really blue state. But that only applies if you look at how we tend to vote with presidential elections. So I would contend that you know, it was never my intention to put together a partisan bill, and I sort of reject that assertion. It was always my hope to work towards something. And to that point, I want to correct something that I said earlier this morning when I said there were only a few bills offered by Republicans regarding elections. There was actually 16, and we've actually heard two of them, maybe four of them, if you consider some of the bills were almost exactly the same as other Democratic votes. While at the same time, you know, I've heard we need to consider what the Senate's doing, and we don't need to consider what the Senate's doing. So you know, I mean, sometimes it's convenient to say we need to consider what's happening with the Senate, and sometimes it's convenient to say we don't need to consider what's happening in the Senate because we're our own body. You know, we can sit and continue to debate this, and my guess is there will be more debate on the provisions within this bill that will extend beyond the Government Operations Committee, and I actually welcome that debate. I think it's a good debate to have. I think it's a good debate to have publicly, and I think we should continue forward with that. I would just say that, as I've said several times since the session started and since I was selected to be the chair of the Subcommittee on Elections, that I consider a bill that makes it through both the House and the Senate and gets in front of the governor's desk to be a bipartisan bill. Do I believe that every provision in this bill that I put forward is going to be in that bill? I personally don't believe so. There have been, as was stated by some of our GOP members, that the Senate has no intention of taking up an elections bill as an elections bill. But again, the elections are part of their state government finance. I'm not sure exactly what it's called, because there are some times where I don't pay attention to what the Senate is doing. So I would just say that I think we should proceed with debate. I'm available for questions. We can talk about the concern that folks have of some of the provisions in the bills, this bill, because that's what we do here. That's what the committee work is about. I'm sure we'll have some things raised on the floor when and should this bill make it to the floor about that, but that's what we do here. We're here to debate these issues that I think many Minnesotans consider critical And I would just hope that we continue this. And, you know, this bill has had a pretty thorough vetting in the subcommittee. This is really a subcommittee report made to all of you. And I would hope that we at some point would get back to the bill and questions that members might have about certain provisions within the bill and why they're here and what they do.
Thank you, Chair Dean. Before we do that, I would like to recognize Representative West. Thank you. Thank you for coming here tonight. It's good to see you back. I know you had kind of an unpleasant situation, so I'm glad to see you're able to be up and about. So thank you for being here. If you haven't been here for a couple weeks, if you have any remarks or anything.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was trying to be back here earlier today, but I had a little setback this morning, but with the blood clot, laying on the bed for 10 hours helps get the blood flowing in the right direction. So I got a couple good hours in me.
Okay.
Thanks.
Mr. Chair, I'll just remind other Republican members that he's got a couple good hours in him, not five, not six. A couple.
We can stretch him probably.
He promised he was going to tell me that.
So we are on the Zerwas motion to send the bill to re-refer the bill. Is there additional discussion to the Zerwas motion? Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess I'm pretty sure I requested a roll call. I want to confirm that. And I guess, you know, this isn't a gotcha motion. This is. I think there are provisions within the bill that I think everybody likes. We should do what we can to preserve those provisions within the bill. And I think as we kind of look at where this is heading, Chair Dean, I think this is our Bonnie and Clyde moment. And we're in the car together. And we're screaming towards the Senate. And I'm just trying to give you an off-ramp. So I hope we get a chance to get this into a position that has a chance for the provisions that we agree on, that they have a chance of moving forward. I think in the current shape, it probably is set to go over the cliff.
Representative Freiberg and Representative Zerwas, well, Bonnie and Clyde did not go over a cliff. That's a different movie. and I would just... which, if that's really the analogy, we need to have a conversation. But I would also say that I actually like Bonnie and Clyde's chances a little bit better if we don't have automatic weapons, which was actually allowed in their days. I'm willing to take that chance.
Yeah. Thank you. And I was trying to think of some other movie with two people named going over a cliff, but I couldn't.
Well, actually, I'd be
Sundance.
Oh. Sundance.
That's probably what I meant, not the one.
Okay, so seeing no additional discussion, the clerk will take the roll on the Zerwas motion to amend the motion to send this to the subcommittee.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Gomez.
No.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Pawlowski. Representative Sauk. Mm.
Representative Pawlowski is right here.
Oh!
It's a little crowded in here. Standing where there is air. No, I can sit right here.
There's another chair over here to represent.
So it's three voting?
Yes.
To refer it back to...
This is the motion, the Zerwas motion to refer it back to the election subcommittee.
Okay, I...
Representative Zerwas.
Yes.
Representative Heinrich.
Yes.
Representative Lehman.
Yes.
Representative Nash.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Tice.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative West?
Yes.
Okay, there being 9 ayes and 10 nays, the motion does not prevail. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. At this time, I'd like to ask the author of the bill. We've talked a little bit about the path of the bill. Can you recap the committees this bill has been in, to the author?
Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, this bill has been in the Subcommittee on Elections, which is where it was crafted. It is now before the Government Operations, which originated most of, maybe probably all of the bills that are included in this. And I believe the motion is to send it back to Ways and Means, and Ways and Means will ultimately decide where its next stop is.
Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would invite members in the new engrossed version of the bill to turn to line 2.6 within Article 1. But first, let's start at line 2.4, where it really says that Article 1 of this bill is amending Chapter 13. Are there any amendments to Chapter 13 according to Rule 4.16? Is an automatic referral to the Judiciary and Civil Law Committee. And so, Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion that this bill be moved to the Judicial and Civil Law Committee, and I'll request a roll call.
So, Representative Zerwas has moved to refer this to the Judiciary Committee and request a roll call. Chair Dean, to the motion.
Mr. Chair and members, this is a provision that is related and added because of a bill that's traveling in another path, which I believe has gone or will go to Judiciary. Well, I believe that it will eventually get to Judiciary. What always gets talked about relative to data is that if we touch Chapter 13, that it all has to go to Judiciary for data. Now, this is not creating something that's completely different and a totally different data set. Actually, there is no reference in Subdivision 9 here actually to Chapter 13. It just says that the data on an application for a driver's license of a Minnesota identification card or a learner's permit transferred to the Secretary of State that are provided by a person whom the Secretary of State determines is not eligible to vote are governed by this section. That currently already happens with learner's permits and other things. So this is not really adding a new section of data and a new role in which the Secretary of State is involved in the validation of a person's ability to vote.
Thank you, Chair Dean. Representative Nelson was next on the list, then Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, I maybe Mr. Burris could help me with this, but I believe I don't have the rules here, but the rule for the referrals to this, it has to go there before second reading, not before first deadline. It has to go to that committee before second reading. So if there's another bill that's traveling that has this language in, that's already in or going to go to there, it does not have to go there before first reading. The other bill or the language that's in that that's the same as this can just has to be heard in before second reading.
Mr. Daring is nodding. So, Representative Zerwas?
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. First off, the underlying bill has not gone to Judiciary or Civil Law. It has not yet been heard by that committee. I know earlier in this committee, earlier today, we were told that a finance bill had until their deadline to go and have clones go to civil law prior to second reading. I also know that in this particular bill we talked about earlier is strictly a policy bill and not a finance bill. And members, I spoke to Chairman Lesch of the Civil Law Committee, and he said that he would expect to see this bill before first deadline. And he would say it would be a mandatory referral to his committee. And so we're not going to follow our rules, and we're going to listen to our chairs, or we're not. It's really that simple. But if before first deadline, your intention is to scrap the rules, take the gloves off, and go free for all for the next few months, just let us know. Just be super clear with us if the rules aren't going to matter. But Mr. Chair, it is very clear in our rules that this is a mandatory referral within the bill path in this trajectory. It should very well go next to judiciary and civil law. It is very clear. And to be clear, the change in the underlying bill for the automatic voter registration is you are changing it from an opt-in to an opt-out. So someone's applying for a driver's license or a learning permit or a state ID, their information will automatically be shared with the Secretary of State's office unless they check the box asking it not to be. That is a significant opening up in how data is being shared. That is a significant change from current law. You guys had months to move this bill, and you decided to do it the day before final deadline. That's not on us, to be clear. I didn't tell you when to schedule the bill for a hearing. That's on you. That's on you. And so you need to follow the rules of the House. The rules are very clear. In a policy-only bill, which what Representative Dean earlier today said this is, on the way through, it must meet its policy obligations before first deadline. This is a mandatory referral. Mr. Chair, I can't remember if I asked for a roll call, but I would ask for a roll call on this motion, which would be to keep and follow the rules of the House.
Representative Nash. Quick response, Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Zerwas, I don't think I ever said this is a policy-only bill. As a matter of fact, if you turn to the last page, 84, there's actually space for the Legislative Coordinating Commission where we will have to fund the amount of money for that, as well as money for the Secretary of State for the costs associated with implementing Article 3 or portions of Article 3. So I understand what you're saying, but I don't believe I ever said this was a policy-only bill. And, you know, if I don't plan on spending hours re-listening to the tape. And, you know, I did not have conversations with Chair Lesch where he told me he was concerned about this bill and that it needs to go to him, but I would just, you know, defer to Mr. Gehring relative to our rules and his understanding of actually what our rules do say.
The motion is to refer to this to Ways and Means, yes, too, which suggests it's not a policy-only bill. I beg your pardon? Did you have Mr. Gehring? Oh, you mentioned. Okay, I think he's fine. Representative Nash.
Well, Mr. Chair, that was my request. Was I saw Mr. Gehring, and I don't want to use Mr. Gehring to settle arguments here, so I guess I won't. But this is, to me, when we were, Mr. Chair, I'm over here. When we were in the majority for the last 4 years, and we listened to bills like this, and we sat in committee rooms just like this, and we listened to your concerns. If something as clearly as Chapter 13 that is an automatic referral to judiciary was ignored, I would have expected to have been here all night. And we're just going to dismiss this? We're going to just brush it off like it's a piece of dandruff on your shoulder? I think that's outrageous. So if there's a way to actually settle this, if there's someone that wants to weigh in on this that is our expert on rules and how this bill is supposed to be referred, I certainly think that it's worth the effort, Mr. Chair. So if it's possible, if there's an answer, to me, this is very clear. And in your choosing to do this, to Representative Zerwas's point, you're choosing to ignore the rules. So, Mr. Chair, it's your decision. And you are making a conscious decision to tell not just the minority, but the people represented by the minority, that your voice really doesn't matter. So, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Representative Pawlowski.
Mr. Chair, I was sentenced to the Judiciary Committee for one legislative session. It was one of the worst experiences of my life.
Was it worse than government operations in this session?
They debated the placement of a comma or of a semicolon for 12 hours. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't even send a bill there.
Okay.
That's my comment.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that. And that's kind of consistent with what I heard from Representative Nelson about second deadline and Mr. Gehring. So I guess I don't accept the premise that we are somehow violating the rules by doing this. I think we've heard quite a bit of information about how the process is consistent. Chair Dean, you have a...
And Mr. Chair and members, I think that over the past several weeks, and I think this morning and today, we've allowed the voices of the minority to speak. I know that many of you are representing the interests of some of your constituents. I heard the conversation earlier this morning about how many people vote in Minnesota and the excitement about that, which I think we're all excited. But for those who have won by thin margins, and less than 50% of the people vote in your district, that means that you have a majority that's representing less than 25% of the people who could have voted in your district. So I think as we begin to talk about this and go through it, it was referenced the other day that words matter. I believe words matter. I don't think, Chair Freiberg, I don't think it's your intent at all to suppress the voice of the minority, and even those people that the representatives in the minority party actually represent. So I think that we need to sometimes really choose carefully our words and how we throw them around as if they don't matter, because I truly believe they do matter.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Representative Kwan.
Well, since it was referenced allowing or stifling the voice earlier on in the committee, the bill that we had two different copies in, there was some confusion in the beginning. When I was asking about different details, getting familiar with, a fairly decent-sized bill with a lot of complexities and intricacies, you went ahead and when I was in asking questions, went on to another person, and I said, well, I wasn't done unless you want to muzzle the minority, and your response was to go to the next person. So I took that there wasn't the interest in actually going through the details of this bill, and so I would take some difference to what was just stated by the author, along with some differences, some of the things that he had commented on that I actually had some data from the Secretary of State's, from the legislative auditor, and et cetera, in regards to statements that he's made before the committee in regards to this bill. So when you decide to actually not muzzle us and let us dig into the details, please let me know and put me on the list.
Thank you, Representative Kwan. Is there, so we are on the, oh, I'm sorry. Representative Lilly?
Go ahead, Mr. Chair, if you were moving along. But hey, Mr. Chair, welcome back, Representative West. I've been thinking about you as you've been going through your journey, given what I went through last year, but definitely been thinking about you. I've been paying attention to this discussion, you know, all day with all of us, and, I've been here a while, so I've seen election bills that have been, you know, different than this, and but this isn't necessarily a bad thing to move the discussion the needle. I think we're all big enough people here to realize that it's probably not going to, you know, you've probably seen the video how things become law, and, you know, I mean, we all kind of know that, and if you don't, you can watch it. But, so things are probably going to change, you know, as it goes along. And I don't think we're going to be, there's going to be other swings at the bat, you know, or other opportunities to say what's good and bad as it moves through other committees, and certainly in Ways and Means, you'll have chances, and you really could have a lot of fun on the House floor, I'm sure. I could probably help you write some stuff. You know, you're going to have some chances, and I think to say that we're muzzling is probably, you know, it sounds good, but it probably isn't really true. I mean, to the extent of, I mean, you're going to have plenty of chances, plenty of bites of the apple, or whatever you want to say. So I guess I'm speaking in favor of moving this along tonight, and I think we're all adult enough to know that, you know, this probably won't become law, all of it. But, maybe some of it will. Maybe it's time for some of this for Minnesota. I don't know. I don't know what'll make it or what won't, but I'm comfortable with voting to move it forward at this point.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Okay, there are no additional members on the list. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm muzzling the majority. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, members. I do not feel muzzled, first of all. Second, I just wanted to kind of briefly say, you know, as sort of the new kid in the room, if you will, I can't say what previous committees were like. Obviously, I was not here to be a part of that. But I think one of the things that I have been a little bit disappointed in is that I came here with the idea that I really truly, and I mean this, wanted to work as closely as possible on doing what's right for Minnesotans, for my district, and that includes working with folks on the other side of the aisle. When I campaigned in my own district, I don't really care what party you are. I was going to talk to you because it's my belief that I represent my whole district. Not just a portion of it. I really respect some of the folks on the other side of the aisle, and we've had, in some cases, some very good, healthy discussion, and some excellent points raised. I want to thank Representative New, who is sitting in the audience here. She took me to task on a couple of things, but came out with some very good suggestions that I think made for a healthy debate and made for better policy. And that's really how this process should work. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the input of some of the folks in this room and from the Elections Committee that did good work to try and improve some of the work that we've done. But I just want to be clear. We talked a little bit about this bill being very partisan, and I guess I'm a little bit troubled by that characterization, because there's a good part of this bill where we're talking about things like allowing local government to choose whether or not they want to have ranked choice voting. That's not a Republican issue. That's not a Democratic issue. That's neither. That's about letting the voters choose. You know, when we talk about, redistricting, you know, and putting that power in the hands of a panel and judges so that we know that our elections are fair. And people in Minnesota are asking for that. That isn't about showing favor to one party or the other. In fact, quite the opposite. We're talking about putting something in a context to ensure that our elections are fair. when we talk about making sure that people who seek election communications have transparency, that they know who is trying to influence their vote. The Supreme Court themselves pushed that back to the states for us to act. 19 states have already done so. They want us to take action. The people of Minnesota want us to take action. And many of you have probably had the conversations at the door with your voters that they do care. They want to know where those communications are coming from. We're not suggesting that somebody shouldn't say what they want to say or have the right to speak what they want to speak, but we want to know where it's coming from. The voters have a right to that. And so a lot of the things in this bill, we're trying to make this out to be partisan when it's really not. And I find that extremely disappointing. I certainly understand and under no illusions that this is not part of the political maneuvering. But I, you know, as someone who really truly believes in the process, I do find it a little bit difficult to go along and say that that's not it. And I have to say, in elections yesterday, I was very disappointed because we came back with an amendment that more or less took 80% of the bill off the table, including three of the things that I just mentioned here tonight, which are not partisan in any fashion. And I have to tell you that, you know, if the other side was serious about wanting to talk about and share ideas and have discussion, they could have come back with very pointed suggestions on where we could make those improvements, on certain pieces of the bills, on certain bills that they did not care for, or ways to improve the system. They did not. So to sit here and pretend that there was a concerted effort to do that is not fair or genuine. And I don't think anyone in this room or anyone listening to this is going to be fooled by that. For that reason, I am going to be supporting this bill tonight to continue on so that it can continue, and hopefully we will continue to have further discussion on this bill, further refinements on this bill, and it is my hope that as it continues its journey, we can have good, robust debate on its contents and make real decisions that benefit real people in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
No, please hold the applause. Is there anyone else who would like to speak to the Zerwas motion to refer to the Judiciary Committee? Okay, seeing none, a roll call has been requested. Clerk, we'll take the roll. We're ready.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Sauk. No. Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Gomez.
No.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Representative Zerwas.
Yes.
Representative Heinrich.
Yes.
Representative Lehman.
Yes.
Representative Nash.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Aye.
Representative Tice.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative West.
Yes.
Being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. So, are we back to the bill?
I think so.
Okay. Representative Zerwas, would you like to...
Yeah, you like it. Mr. Chair, I forget how many provisions total are in the bill, but there are 23 provisions that I roughly count that have no Republican, they have only DFL authors or co-authors, or no authors in the Senate. And so the idea that this somehow isn't a hyper-partisan bill, I think, just misses the boat. I'll tell you what, I know some might be frustrated that Representative Nash offered an amendment in the election subcommittee to strip out 80% of the contents of the bill. Members, this bill is drowning, and he offered you a rope. And you turned it down. This bill will not move forward. This bill will not be heard in the Senate. This bill will not make it as a part of a serious conference committee. You might wrap it up in Chair Nelson's state gov finance bill. All that guarantees is that there will be no bipartisan votes for Chair Nelson's bill. You've taken an opportunity to pass some election reforms that broad groups agree on, and you covered it up and covered it up and covered it up in unbelievably highly politicized pieces of election policy. And what will result from that, members, is that in May, Chair Dean and I are going to have a lot of time to talk about our families and hang out together, because we'll be on the same number of conference committees, members. We'll have the exact same amount of free time. And this thing's dead.
Chair Dean.
Yeah, Chair Freiberg and Representative Zerwas, you said there are no Republican co-authors. I believe there are a couple of these bills that actually do.
Of the 23 provisions that I counted.
Yeah, and these provisions are actually in here. So I believe there are a couple. So when we make these blanket statements that none of them, that may not be true. And although the language may be slightly different on the Senate side, that doesn't mean that they're not addressing some of those other bills as well. For instance, I believe that Senator Nelson has a bill around electronic voting system provision modifications with the alternative printed ballot styles authorized in a Senate file 1566. And I know that Senator Housley has a bill on electric voting system provision modifications for alternative printed ballot styles authorizing. And that's Senate file 481. So, if we're not going to talk about the bill, I'm happy to talk about a lot of other things. But I'd really enjoy it if we could talk about the bill and some of the provisions in the bill.
So, additional discussion. Representative
Quam. Thank you. So the muzzle's off and I'm on the list like I requested?
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see your hand. You're welcome to speak.
Oh, I thought I spoke it clearly. I'd like to continue with part of the discussion we had earlier. Unfortunately, the Secretary of State and I don't see the person from the county here. There's reference by the author when we were discussing about issues about integrity, and the implication was that there really aren't any problems. Well, the legislative auditor, in the report about almost exactly a year ago, there were tens of thousands of bad registrations. Just looking at the ones that were by HAVA, Social Security Administration has a verification location that states all across this nation, including Minnesota, are utilizing. And in 2016 election, we had over 16,000 mismatched registrations. 2018, over 15,000.
It was brought up in committee last year. What were the determinations? We didn't have an answer. I know that the auditor is doing some continual work to try and find out, you know, as in we have all tens of thousands of bad registrations. What were the determinations? So months of not having any response, I sent a letter to the Secretary of State. Secretary of State's response basically was, oh, that's the counties that would be doing this verification. So I generated a letter and sent to 15 counties. I believe eight or nine of the top 10 population-wise, and then hit regionally. Their response from the head of their organization was, oh, we don't have access. And, oh, the database doesn't have the information anyway to be able to verify. So the end result is both the Secretary of State and our counties say there's no way to verify tens of thousands of bad registrations. There's no information to be able to determine if tens of thousands of people voted with those bad registrations. It was a court case of which Secretary of State lost, and the judge said you must allow access to the public information, and Secretary of State's appealing it. During part of the appeal process, they were asked, well, could the next Secretary of State share this with this group? And the answer was yes. It was at the discretion of the Secretary of State who they would share public information with. And this will tie into another section in here. So we've got valid concerns because it showed up in this committee a year ago from the legislative auditor auditing the registration process for our elections. And we have no track record of being able to verify. So fast forward, you know, that's why I've got some issues about verification when we are adding basically election day for 30 days. You've got a section in here on the redistricting advisory commission of where over two-thirds of the people that would be on that redistricting group, all of those are, you know, they take the applications in. All of that is funneled through the Secretary of State's office. Again, someone that feels they have discretion of who they choose to share information, to cooperate with, and rejects the judge ruling, say, you know, you need to, it's public information, who says, it's not my responsibility to verify our election system, verify tens of thousands of bad registrations, verify if any of them voted. I mean, that there are words that come to mind about, not doing their job. Or is there any other motive that might be around? I don't know. But frankly, I always thought that was their responsibility to do due diligence. But apparently, it's not. And we're anticipating handing, we've got 201 people in the legislature that are involved in redistricting. We've already discussed just how bipartisan the districts are, how competitive, because we had half of them switch party affiliation last time. And we're going to hand it from 201 down to 17, and over two-thirds of those people are funneled through one constitutional officer's area which, from their correspondence to members of this committee, past and present, it's not their job to verify the integrity of our election system. It makes me wonder why we're putting all that responsibility there to verify who's going to be on a committee that we're giving over the control. I brought up issues with California, right? They've got a similar system, and there are problems. So can the author reassure me that in your bill you've corrected the integrity issues with our system, that we don't have problems with going from election day and all the processes to maintain the integrity to 30 days of walk in and vote, and again 30 days of, I assume, same day registration without apparently verification before the hand. I just want some assurances that we aren't actually making our system worse instead of better.
Representative Quam, no muzzle could contain you. Chair Dean.
Mr. Chair and Representative Quam, I'm glad you got to some form of a question at the end, because I was listening pretty intently to what you were saying. And I did look at the auditor's report around our elections, and I believe their findings was our elections are actually really good. Regarding the mismatched registrations or those individuals, the Secretary of State does go through a process regarding verification of those particular registrations. Return mail, which I think what you may have been speaking to, is just one method of which the Secretary of State actually verifies elections. After every election, the Secretary of State looks at what happened, looks at the vote, looks at issues around same-day registrations. There's actually quite an intensive process that takes place. Now, you talked about three or four different sections, I believe, that when you were talking and you asked me if I could ensure the integrity of our elections, and I would say that the process by which allowing the Secretary of State to do their job is something that we've done with Republican Secretaries of State and Democratic Secretaries of State. There are certain roles and responsibilities that are outlined. I believe that the auditor's report did not report anything that the Secretary of State was doing that was unusual or very concerning. I don't know if I can guarantee something that I don't think even happens. So to that, I would just say you raised some interesting issues, and I know there are concerns of individuals out there about those issues, but I would just ask that you go back and look a little more detailed at the legislative auditor's report and see what it says relative to our elections, how secure, how much integrity there is in our elections, the issues related to voter fraud and other types of things. I would just refer you back to the legislative auditor's report.
Representative Mr. Chair, anyone that was in the meeting where the legislative auditor spoke to the committee would be very well aware that they could not answer about the determination on these, the registrations. They actually had no answers about the Social Security Administration, the HAVA link for verification and the over 16,000 mismatch. When they were asked, they basically said, we don't know We didn't see information. No one had an answer. That's why they again are returning and are looking and trying to find out. So to say there was a conclusion, well, everything's hunky-dory, you know, frankly, I don't know about you, but tens of thousands of votes, it's hard to be able to say that that's hunky-dory when how many of our statewide elections over the years have been decided by a few hundred or a few thousand.
Jardine, to the issue of hunky-doriness.
Well, I actually love David Bowie's Hunky Dory album, but I don't think that that's what we're talking about. You know, to the other issue that you brought up about redistricting and creating a commission that has independence, that will, in many ways, you know, within this bill, make a recommendation to the legislature on redistricting. You know, we have failed as a legislature the past several decades on actually putting forward a map that wasn't contested, that in the end judges made the decisions about our maps. In 1972, I believe it was three federal judges. In 82, another three federal judges. In 92, three federal and three state judge panel. In 2002, a five-state judge panel. In 2012, a five-state judge panel. The Constitution puts it upon us to draw the maps. We've been failing in our ability to do that. In essence, what we have done is we have taken a process that is meant to be done within our legislative body, one of the three branches of government, and we've ultimately gave it over to another branch of government to draw the redistricting map. I think relative to the commission that would be established within this bill, I think the thought is we tend to draw maps that are in our interest. You know, and I think that that's something important to consider. Now, something that's been talked about that hasn't been said, and I don't know if I'm going to blow everything up by saying it. We don't know what the outcome of the 20... Yeah, thank you. We'll talk about that over dinner, Representative Zerwas. That we don't know what's going to happen in the 2020 election. There's an entire possibility that the Republicans may take over a majority in the House. They may maintain a majority in the Senate. The Democrats may maintain a majority in the House and ultimately take over a majority in the Senate. Now, if you look at sort of those possibilities, there's one thing that's consistent in all of that, and that is if nothing drastic happens, we will have a governor who is a Democratic governor. So there is a scenario where if you all push back against something that would create an independent commission, Democrats are going to be able to draw the redistricting map. Now, you know, you talk, you know, about congressional districts, and, you know, that was mentioned, but you also talked about 201 legislators. Two very different sets of maps. You know, we know that Senate tends to swing not as much as the House tends to swing. But I'm not saying that how our redistricting has crippled our ability to do our work here in what should be a bipartisan manner. I mean, let's remind the public that 75% to 80% of the bills that we vote on are bipartisan, significantly bipartisan. We talk about a few things that are really, really passionate and really, really critical to each side. And those tend to be the most contentious, and I will just say that they tend to be the things that the media covers, because the media has, one, a job to do, but they also have issues around revenue and other types of things that they need to consider as well. Hopefully we're not doing that as we're moving forward. But I would just put forward that an independent commission is something that many, many people in the state of Minnesota, from both sides of the aisle, have been asking when it comes to redistricting. I'm not going to go back over the, you know, the states and the questions from this morning regarding another bill. I think we all heard that conversation. But I think that this is the right thing to do. You may disagree, and that's why we have a legislature. And ultimately, that's why we have elections, so that people allow us to come here to have these debates. And every election, the people in our districts decide if they like the job we've done, or maybe they haven't liked the job that we've done. And some people get reelected, and some new people get elected. And that begins anew every 2 years here in the House, and every 4 years, except after a census, then it's a two-year period. You know what happens over on that other side. So I would just, you know, put that forward to your issue of redistricting and having public members making the decision and having those public members be not selected directly by the Secretary of State's office, but actually narrowed down by the Secretary of State's office, from which both Republicans, Democrats, and independent and other party people would actually be designated and selected from. So back to the assertion about me guaranteeing, or, you know, I'm not going to do that. I was not in the committee hearing that you spoke where the legislative auditor came and talked, so I can't speak to what was actually said there. I mean, I don't think we want to wait for me to go back and listen to all those tapes. Hopefully it was a tape committee hearing. But, you know, I've followed elections for quite some time. I followed the role of the Secretary of State's office in elections. And I think that there will always be in a voting public of nearly 3 million votes, there will be some issues with a few of those registrations. And what we ultimately are trying to do is create the least amount of error that exists within that system so that everybody believes that their vote counts and their vote mattered and ultimately that it was worth their while to vote. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And first of all, to the author, I will not argue with your view of how the legislative bodies swing. I'll trust your word on that. But the thing about the Secretary of State, if you stock the pool, you control what is caught or selected. And the concern is stocking the pool in regards to, you know, the Secretary of State and the selection of that group. But I'm assuming we'll have another swing at this. Maybe it's on the floor. I will, you know, since we've had this maybe not quite or around 24 hours now, I will get with the author on some details, and I will let Representative West stretch a little bit.
Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for coming back this evening on this bill and allowing my members to participate before folks had other obligations in the morning. I truly appreciate that. Special thanks to Representative West to come back. You really missed it until you got back here. But thanks for coming in, and appreciate your willingness to do that. And Mr. Chair, I would ask for a roll call on the final passage of this bill. I would urge members to vote no. As I can tell, I think in the Senate they've heard 4 election bills in committee. We're not matching up on a lot of them. So, just so we're clear, I don't want to overdo it, but I think the provisions in this bill that are non-controversial probably don't stand much luck this session because of the strategy of the author and of the majority. I am encouraged, Representative Dean, that you're sending the restoration of the vote bill separately. You and I have worked on that bill together for, I think, three bienniums now.
Mr. Chair and Representative, it would actually be 7 years.
It's all 7 years. It's been all 7 years. And so I'm happy to be on that bill with you. I'm happy to be number two on that bill and hope that we get a vote on that bill. I'm glad that's separate, because anything in this bill is doomed. Mr. Chair, it asks for a roll call, and I encourage my members and the other members, all members, to oppose this bill on the basis that for the first time in 2+ decades, we're moving an elections bill that not only doesn't have broad bipartisan support, doesn't have bipartisan support. I think that's a disservice for the institution. I think it's a disservice for the process. My guess is the newly elected members here on this committee most likely didn't campaign all summer going door to door to door to say, I promise you I will force through controversial election bills on party line votes. My guess is you told your voters that you wanted to come to St. Paul, reach across the aisle, and work together to pass good policy. This bill doesn't reach across the aisle. This bill doesn't get to common ground. This bill misses the mark on those goals. It's unfortunate, because the good provisions within this bill will be lost because of it.
Seeing no additional remarks, Chair Dean, would you like to make any closing remarks?
Well, Mr. Chair and members, I want to thank you for the opportunity. I wish we would have talked a little bit more about the bill, because I was prepared. I was ready. And I would just say that I think there are some provisions in this bill that there's a lot of agreement on, and you guys have even said there's provisions, and I hope that in the end, if some of these provisions were to leave the bill, I hope that at least most of those provisions that we agree upon will end up getting before the governor to actually sign into law. I think that, you know, it's time for us to not be shy about trying to make our elections as good as possible, as accessible as possible for those members who are legally authorized to vote, as well as in many ways making it somewhat easier for those individuals who are legally voting in the state of Minnesota. So I just want to thank everybody again for their time. I look forward to presenting this bill in whatever committee it needs to go to again. Mr. Chair, and I'll let you go to the vote.
Sure. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 1603, as amended, be referred to the Ways and Means Committee. A roll call has been requested, so the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Sauk.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Elkins.
Yes.
Representative Gomez.
Yes.
Representative Cagle.
Yes.
Representative Lee.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Pawlowski.
Yes.
Representative Zerwas.
No.
Representative Heinrich.
No.
Representative Lehman.
No.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Quam.
Nay.
Representative Tice.
No.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative West.
No.
There being 11 ayes and 8 nays, the motion prevails. The bill is on its way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, members.
Thank you, Chair Dean. Representative Schultz, when last we left House File 1855, I had withdrawn my motion, which had been amended. So I will now make a new motion to refer to that House File 1855 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. So we've had quite a bit of discussion about this already. We can certainly have some more. So I guess I'll just open it up to member discussions. Representative Zerwas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Mr. Chair, I'll make a motion to amend your motion to refer the bill back to the Elections Committee.
Okay.
The bill has more work to be done than that needs to occur in the Elections Committee.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
The Elections Subcommittee.
Okay, a motion has been made to refer the bill to the Elections Subcommittee. Is there any discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. After consultation with members of my caucus, it was decided that this bill needs to go back to the subcommittee and get straightened out.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, can you be more specific, Representative Zerwas, so we know what we need to work on if it does go back there?
Yep, thank you, Mr. Chair.
We have actually discussed this exact motion, but Representative Zerwas, if you'd care to rehash.
Yeah, I'll be brief. Nolan's barely hanging on. thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. The concerns are with the language that was removed in the subcommittee on elections, that there's too much ambiguity within the bill as it would move forward to be placed on the ballot. We just think that the definitions are too loosey-goosey, as a technical term, and not clear to individuals that would be participating in that ballot initiative. Mr. Chair, I would request a roll call on my motion as well.
Okay. Roll call has been requested. Any additional discussion?
Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The definitions, now that you've gone through the elections bill, the definitions appear in that bill that were underlined in the 1605 bill. So we could walk through information on what is in that bill that is consistent as an enabling legislation language that's in that bill. They're just not tied together.
Representative Zerwas?
Mr. Chair, we have no confidence that that bill is ever going to become law. And so tying a constitutional amendment to a bill that is doomed makes no sense to us. And so we're not willing to move forward with enabling or explanatory language within an underlying bill that, quite frankly, will not make it and clearly will not be in a position where potential voters on a constitutional amendment would be able to refer to as they try to make an informed decision on their vote. And so the direction I was provided, Mr. Chair, and to the author was that this bill needed to refer back to the Elections Committee. As a dutiful lead on this committee, that is my motion.
Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. Representative Quam, I think you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author. Frankly, if your bill is not complete and cannot stand on its own foundations, especially if it's to be a constitutional amendment, then it's not ready for prime time.
Thank you, Representative Quam. Is there Representative Schultz?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. While I am not great at making predictions of what's going to happen in this legislative session, so I don't think we should base our judgments on the predictions that this bill is going to fail. I think we should be optimists and believe that these bills will go forward and follow the process through. And so I urge you to support this and move it forward, not back to elections, because the enabling legislation is spelled out in the elections bill.
sounds like you're saying support the bill. The motion before support, us is the Zerwas motion to re-refer it to the elections.
I would urge members not to support the Zerwas motion and to move it forward, not backward, in the Elections Committee.
Additional discussion? Okay, a roll call having been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
No.
Representative Sauk.
No.
Representative Bonner.
No.
Representative Elkins.
No.
Representative Gomez.
No.
Representative Cagle.
No.
Representative Lee.
No.
Representative Lilly.
No.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Nelson.
No.
Representative Pulowski.
No.
Someone pump the laughing gas in. You can't make it up.
Representative Zerwas.
Yes.
Representative Heinrich.
Yes.
Representative Lehman.
Yes.
Representative Nash.
Yes.
Representative Quam.
Aye, aye.
Representative Tice.
Yes.
Representative Vogel.
Yes.
Representative West.
Yes.
There being 8 ayes and 11 nays, the motion does not prevail. So we are back to the motion to refer House File 1855 to the Committee on Ways and Means. Additional member discussion. There has already been a fair amount. Representative Zerwas.
Mr. Chair, I'd ask for a roll call.
Sure. A roll call has been requested. Additional discussion? Okay. Any closing remarks, Representative Schultz?
I would want to, I really want to thank Common Cause, Minnesota, Anastasia. I think she was here. She's here for all the work she's been doing on the redistricting bills. And Peter Watson has also been doing a substantial amount of work. They're very knowledgeable. I hope we can work together going forward on getting some redistricting legislation through each chamber and to the governor. And we can work in a bipartisan way. So I know I did speak to a lot of Republicans, and I think they're warming up to the idea. We'll see where we are going forward. But I really value your input, Republican input, on getting something together that's bipartisan. And this is going to travel separately because it is a constitutional amendment. And so I look forward to all of your input going forward from our advocates. And I also want to clarify that the constitutional amendment, the enabling legislation, is House File 1605, which Representative Cleavorn has worked so diligently on that bill, and will use all of the principles in that enabling legislation and follow how we construct the independent commission. So I just want to thank everyone that's been involved to date and urge members to support the motion.
Thank you, Representative Schultz. A roll call has been requested. The clerk will take the roll.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Sauk.
Yes.
Representative Bonner.
Yes.
Representative Elkins.
Yes.
Representative Gomez.
Yes.
Representative Cagle.
Yes.
Representative Lee.
Yes.
Representative Lilly.
Yes.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative Nelson.
Yes.
Representative Pulowski.
Reluctantly, yes.
Representative Zerwas. Representative Heinrich.
Yes. No.
No backs. Whatever Pulowski does.
I'll grant you that no.
Mr. Chair, no.
Yes.
Representative Lehman.
No.
Representative Nash.
No.
Representative Quam.
Yes.
Representative Tice.
No.
Representative Vogel.
No.
Representative West.
No.
Thank you. There being 11 ayes and 8 nays, the motion carries. Congratulations, Representative Schultz. I think that's the longest from beginning to end in one day I've ever seen a bill.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair and members, for staying so late to get this important work done. I also want to thank Matt Gehring for all the work he's been doing on it.
Absolutely.
And Amanda for keeping up on track with amendments. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Members, just before we adjourn, I want you to know that House File 3 was on our agenda for tomorrow. It is no longer. It is not in our committee's possession. So we will be meeting tomorrow at 9 a.m. in the basement hearing room. With that, I can say the A word, right? Okay, we're adjourned.